Welcome to another round of IWMA, where all your waste desires come true. So we are going to start this off with a call to order, and then we are going to do Pledge of Allegiance. All those stand if you are able. As soon as Mr. Hale gets up here, we can do a roll call.
Director Arnold. Director Blake.
Yes.
Director Bourbeau.
Here.
Director Compton. Director Heller.
Here.
Director Enns.
Here.
Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Hammond.
Here.
Director Hill.
Here.
Director Lee.
Here.
Director Pichong. Director Storton.
Here.
President Gomez.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. We are all in attendance. So since we are having this meeting on September 11th, obviously this is a big date for our country. And we are going to have a moment of silence and remembrance, as we've seen throughout the entire county. A lot of people are having remembrances because of the major tragedy that did happen on this date. So I have a few moments to reflect. Thank you all for taking that time. So now we are going to go into public comment for items not on the agenda. Looks like we have a few. It looks like we've got one. It just says public comment general would be for Barry Rands. And just as a reminder, everybody, we've got 3 minutes. We don't have a really packed house, but I do want to let everybody know that I am going to be very strict with 3 minutes, because I've noticed if we don't be strict with 3 minutes, things can get a little bit rowdy. And so based on our last occurrence, I want to make sure that we are all sticking to those rules. It's nobody gets more or less. So, Barry, you got 3 minutes.
Thank you, members of the board. I'm Barry Rands. I represent the Slow Climate Coalition. And recently I watched a program on TV called Hoarding, Buried Alive. Those of you that have ever seen that program see how it usually goes. It's a house that's mess, full of trash, and usually they end up by calling the local trash company, and they come with a dumpster or a roll-off if it's a lot of trash, and the garbage service picks everything up. The house gets clean. The trash goes to landfill or recycle. Everybody's happy. But imagine, if you will, the hoarder wants to save some money on dump fees. Instead of bins, he loads up his car and drives off into the countryside, throwing trash out the window. To make it less unsightly, he throws it out a handful at a time, making sure it dissipates into the landscape where no one will notice. Now, I know none of you would approve of such an action, but that is exactly what is happening on our roads every day with every car that is powered by fossil fuels. The average gasoline car emits a pound of CO2 and other pollutants into the atmosphere every mile it drives. Just like the hoarder in my imaginary example, it goes out little by little, hardly noticeable to the naked eye, but it is real. And it is accumulating in our atmosphere at alarming rates. CO2 is the main driving factor for the climate crisis that we are now experiencing in this country, in this globe. And transportation is responsible for 50% of the greenhouse gas emissions in our community. We can do better. And one way to do that is by driving electric. I passed out a flyer to each of you there, and I would encourage you to inform your constituents that the upcoming week, September 14th through the 22nd, is Drive Electric Week, and the Climate Coalition is sponsoring two events in San Luis Obispo. One is at Madonna Inn on September 14th, that's this Saturday, and your constituents and yourselves are invited to come and check out the latest in electric vehicles and electric bikes, try them out, ask questions of the owners, and then there's also going to be an electric vehicle showcase at Farmers Market on Thursday. So let's all do a better part and consider driving electric. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Looks like we've got one more public comment.
I'm Eric Greening, and I wasn't sure a transportation issue was quite in order here, but I can see exactly how it relates. So just picking up on that, an even better containment of pollution is not driving, but that brings up the fact that electrification is not just a matter for cars. Transit systems are going to experience a real challenge with it. And one possible source of grant funding, both for transit agencies and for individual drivers, is the Monterey Community Choice Network. And so I understand the deadline for becoming part of that sooner rather than later has been advanced to October 1st. It is not too late for the jurisdictions that have not yet joined to join, and I certainly would love to see the economy of scale of all jurisdictions in our area joining this. There might even be grant funding for solid waste issues because they directly connect with a lot of the issues that are addressed by community energy and simply by seeing our entire life cycle as a community commons. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Not seeing anybody currently. Ellen, are you filling out something for now or later? Okay. All right. Then that closes the public comment portion, and then now we're into the executive director's report. Mr. Stair, if you want to take this on.
You know, I've been going around the community telling people I'm the new IWMA director, and it doesn't get any better where I say the Integrated Waste Management Authority. That confuses them further. So I thought, you know, I need to have some prepackaged snippets of what to tell people, and I really need to have a presentation. And then Patty and I have been out and about meeting and greeting people and communicating the message of what IWMA stands for. And so I put together a PowerPoint presentation. And so if you'll indulge me, I'll go through this as quickly as I can. But now, how do I get it to project up there? Up here? Okay. So I basically start with from the beginning that we're a joint powers authority covering the 7 jurisdictions and 10 special districts. And I start with the top line there. We're the one supposed to come up with solid waste solutions for the county. And then you could drop down to the third one. We also are responsible for the solid waste requirements from the state and CalRecycle. So those are major functions, but that really doesn't explain what we do. So I looked on our website, and our mission is to manage solid waste issues for the county. Now, that may be changed once we get this strategic plan going, but that's what it says right now. And then I looked at the state requirements. CalRecycle has quite a few. There's probably 40 or 50. I narrowed it down to about 8. There's major milestones. And so we do the plans and reporting that's required right there. And we also run the HHW program. We look at legislative agendas. We do some recycling and occasionally look at ordinances like the poly today. And then when I describe how we fit into the picture and what we actually do for the public, I say we represent the jurisdictions, the public, the hauler, the landfills, and the recyclers. And then we try to meet the CalRecycle requirements. So we're right there in the middle. And then we do all this in that unknown murkiness of the economics and the politics and the limited technologies and what will impact the environment. And so when you look at our planning and what's required from the state, they require several source reduction elements, and that's on the left, and then there's some of the forms that we fill out quarterly on behalf of all the agencies or all the jurisdictions. And then we provide a lot of public outreach. We manage the grants for the entire county, the HHW program, and do, again, reporting, and I've got some slides on all those. Additionally, we monitor the legislative process, so you guys get more of this in your respective jurisdictions, but for the solid waste side, there were 32 different pages of, not items, but 32 pages of solid waste issues that were reviewed this year by the state, and the legislative task force I serve on monitor those, and thus helps monitor them for you. And then we do have 8 ordinances regarding different products on the market right now. And then our public and outreach has been very strong. We have a website, and the left side shows the predominant recycling activity. Those most people want to find out what is recyclable as far as their home products, and then they want to look at the larger items, and those are kind of the top 3, mattresses and refrigerators or appliances and tires. And then we've started tracking what our webpage generates, and last quarter we got 38,000 hits, and the average person spent 2 minutes per hit. So they're not winding up there accidentally, and they're spending some time there. So great outreach. If you do the math and multiply over a year, that's 150,000 people in this county are hitting our website for 2 minutes. It's pretty good. And then we are now part of the county IT, and so we can track our phone calls. And last month, the first month that we had IT, we had 700 phone calls at our office. So again, it's a lot happening with our outreach. And then we have a great education program for the students with Science Discovery Center. They sent out flyers to each school and to each teacher. And so the great thing is it lines up directly with the state required curriculum. So we're actually teaching what the state wants them to learn. And so we've put in the budget for 900 presentations, 125 field trips. Again, Science Discovery and Mike DeMilo's team do this for us. But that averages out to 30,000 students a year. And it's not just this little, here's the flyer, or here's a little program. The average class is at least 50 minutes, and the tours are 2 hours. So 30,000 students are getting between 1 and 2 hours of direct information about solid waste issues through us, through our agency. And then there's also the business outreach portion, and I know you can't see the detail, but I put it in the back just so you know it's there. But they do about 250 or so site visits every month to businesses, and basically they go in and analyze the type of waste that they have, guide them and let them know what the state's requirements are for diversion, and they help them comply. There's no enforcement side. It is strictly to guide and assist. And they do, again, about 250 a month. And then our HHW program, we've got 5 collection sites open weekly. We also collect a lot of different routine hazardous waste at the landfills, the 3 landfills. And then mattress recycling is fairly new. Last year we only had 2 sites open, and we still did over 10,000 mattresses and box springs. And this year we have 3 sites already, so we expect that number is going to go up quite a bit. And again, this is a program that we're helping with. Okay, so that is in a nutshell, and I know that was 5 minutes, but when we're going out and about and talking about IWMA and what we do and the functions we have and the service we provide, that is what we've put together as a brief presentation, and that would be available. I know sometimes y'all speak on behalf of the agency, and so we can provide this for you, but we're going to do this. We're out in the public and speaking. We want to start with what we do and what we are as an agency. And is that good for everybody? Everybody okay with that idea? Okay, thank you. And now on to the actual oral report. So we want to be transparent, and we want to implement best management practices. So I'm sorry we're giving you a lot of information today, but we just want to let you know what we're doing. So the first thing we want to show you is the credit card receipts. And so you look at that and you see $19,600, which is quite a bit of money. And just to let you get the detail there, that is from May through most of July. And of the 19.6, 17.6 was the IT transition or migration to the county. That was the hardware and software that was necessary to make our building talk to their building. It's the first time county IT had ever absorbed somebody like that. And of course, the first time we had ever done it. So it took, Patty will get into it, but it most of the money for the credit cards was spent on the IT changeover. And that's a one-time expense. And then we're looking at the budget, but we're only 2 months in. And so this is the SAP report from the county. Again, just being transparent and showing you the money. And so just a reminder of our budget snapshot, we had $4.3 million that was carried forward from prior years. And then our budget revenue estimate from the tipping fees and the 2% on the hauling is $2.1 million. So we would have $6.4 million total revenue. Our expenses were $3.1 million. And again, that's higher than normal. The normal was about $2.5 million. But I'll talk about that in a second. So it still would leave us as a reserve of $3.3 million. And of that, $1 million is an HHW liability fund that we have to keep for the state. So still got some decent reserves, but we did spend into reserves this year. And so part of that is some one-time expenses for capital. The HCI Education Center and some equipment was about $350,000. So almost half of the overtures was there. And then we have quite a bit of additional legal expense, and this is due primarily to the one-time investigations that are under legal, but they are prior expenses kind of carrying forward. And then also we have not had RFPs on a routine basis. We have not gone out to bid and had to prepare these. We've also not had very strong controls on contracts and agreements, and all of this is coming forward now, and all of it requires legal review. And so that's what's potentially an additional expense that you haven't seen in the past. I mention all this to say that going forward, we'd like to show you a quarterly update, because we really don't have much to show 2 months into the year, because the expenses and the revenue haven't even hit yet. You know, we haven't collected revenue, we haven't spent much. And so what I'd like to do is each quarter we'll take a minute and we'll look at the credit card expenses and our budget, and you can see exactly where we are each quarter. But I want to show you now to show you that we're already tracking it, and in a couple of months when the quarter is ended, we'll come back and present that. And again, is this the pleasure of the board? Are you okay with that strategy? Okay. And implementing best practices or having continuous improvement. So a lot of this was begun before my tenure, but CPS was hired. I think it was a $10,000 contract for them to audit our HR practices. And so they gave us the findings. You see there at the top, June 29th, we finally got those. And I can summarize the finding in one word or hyphen, handbook. We have not had a handbook, and that's the main thing that we need to comply with the HR practices. The other thing is we only have one HR policy, and that policy is F10, and I've got a hard copy here, but I've summarized the statements in quotations there. We're coordinating with SLO County HR and mirroring existing job specs, and then we will align those specifications with the salary and benefits of the county. So we've had a vacant admin assistant position for over a year. And so one of my first priorities was to try to get somebody in the office to help answer the phone and keep the doors open. And it's time Patty and I don't have to spend on. And so it was and we have a contract with the county to advertise through SLO County HR. So they did advertising. As soon as we started getting the applicants back, we realized, oh, they think this is a county job. How's the county pension, county benefits, that kind of thing. And we're not the county. We're supposed to mirror those. So we started to dig a little deeper. And so what benefits are we actually offering? So the county has 27 different bargaining units, and there's 27 different benefits packages. Now, obviously, we can narrow that down to a clerical position, which is what we're looking for. But then when you dig a little deeper, you realize it's not just the pension program that we don't have. Drop program, leave policies, accruals, payouts, health insurance plans different. This is that SLO County employee clerical position, the benefits, copied directly from the county website. So we have not, we've got some work to do of aligning where our benefits line up with theirs, or the board. We need to give you some options and get your opinion and have you guide us in this process. But at the same time, we really need to get an administrative assistant hired. So what we'd like to do is, we've got a couple of qualified applicants, and what we would like to do now is get your approval to offer them the county retirement contribution for this job class that would go into a 401k, offer them a basic health insurance program, and the other benefits will have to wait until we can get the board to approve that, and it will not be retroactive. If they go higher, we will not go back and pay the employee more. It will be moving forward. And this way we can get somebody hired, get them on staff, get some help in the office, and then we can have time to actually figure out how we're going to mirror county policies, procedures, and the handbook. So, again, I'd like your feedback on that, if that seems like a viable option to y'all.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I guess the question is, have you costed out what that amounts to?
No, because I haven't. I was waiting to hear back from you of if you're okay with this idea. What we will do is meet with HR, look at all the positions that we have specified, come back with that, see where that fits in, and then we'll come back for you to determine.
I think that's it. I mean, it's a pretty, I mean, the idea is correct, both from our policy and for the right thing to do to recruit and retain staff.
Correct.
But I guess the question is, in making this change, I think we need to see the full spectrum of what we're looking
at. I just didn't want to do that without getting your approval, verbal approval, at least to look in that direction. And so, yes, we would come back to you with the cost analysis as well.
But before making any job offer.
Oh, before making that job offer, I had hoped to be able to extend that offer and see if we could get them in, because that's basically would mirror what are in our current contracts now, and we would be offering less than that package, less than the county package at this point. Is that?
So we're basically looking at we need to start with a base.
Correct.
And we need to know, this board needs to know, what are we comfortable with from what is that base that we want to start with before we can do the full analysis, or we're going to be left with a month without another employee.
Or two, yes.
Or 2 months without an employee.
So your thought is to bring the employee on under basically the same conditions that the previous employee
correct
was there, and then we'll analyze and go from there.
Correct.
I'm comfortable with that.
Question, just so the employee would have knowledge coming in that there's potential.
Yes, and we would make that very specific to them that it's going to change and that it has to be vetted by the board.
Okay. Thank you.
Have you just used the county HR listing for employees, or have you looked elsewhere?
No, the policy says that it's SLO County, so we have just looked with them.
Okay.
I think for kind of further clarification, we basically as a board went a direction thinking that we could simplify this, not realizing what we're trying to mirror is far more complicated than what we started with. So now we're stuck in that pickle of mirroring isn't simple, but it gave us a parameter. Now we're trying to figure out, all right, what portion of that parameter are we really trying to mirror?
I want to add to that, because you know, the organization went through some turmoil here, and one of the things we realized, and whether it was personnel or financial things, is that we lacked a lot of guidance. You know, we had an absence of policies, and so we latched on this idea of, you know, perhaps utilizing the county for whether it's IT or financial or HR services. It was not in my mind to duplicate county salary schedules, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, along with what Chair Gomez just said, it wasn't to make it more complicated. It was just to make things more clear. And I see a couple things here, a pension plan and drop program, that is, you know, for me would be, you know, almost off the table as far as a serious discussion of adding that. But we can talk about that in greater detail later. I just think it's important that you answered that incoming new employee would be under status quo until we address these issues.
Correct.
So, okay, thank you.
Any further questions, or good with that? Okay.
Okay, and the next transparency issue is the financial or accounting side of what we do. And so we had engaged with the county auditor's office to do a risk assessment. They did not do any hard investigation of our paperwork. It was basically through interviews with staff and finding out what our procedures were. And so they gave us several principles to follow, or that what we should be shooting for as our guidance. And then in the interview process, they gave us some checklists. This is the main one, where we were supposed to determine whether we had appropriate policies and procedures regarding financial matters. And obviously, you can see from the number of no's or unknowns on there, we are lacking as well. And so they gave us our findings September 3rd. And again, that is in your packet, the report, the entire report, for your pleasure. But I just summarized it there, again, just basically cut and pasted these the findings. And one of the most significant ones is the staffing. We do not have a financial person on staff, and so we do not have the experience of someone who can handle those for us. And in my professional experience, it's always been a good idea to keep the group that is spending the money from the group separate from the group that takes in the money and pays the bills, so that you have a checks and balances system. So what we would like to do is you to consider the county auditor's report. Lydia Kaur from the county office is here if you have any questions regarding the report. But what we'd like to do is next month bring you back a budget amendment for a position, an accountant position for IWMA, and we would work with the county auditor's office to align what they think that position would look like, the pay scale, the classification, the experience level, and bring that back to you for consideration for a budget amendment to add that position. So you can consider it at that time. But if you have any questions, Lydia is here to answer them as well.
Have any questions?
I have a specific question. Thank you. So not necessarily related to Ms. Kaur, but from your perspective on how much time a person would, is this a full-time position? Is this a part-time position? Is this someone that could be tasks or duties could be combined with the administrative?
I would see it as a full-time position because they would also be helping with the procurements, the contracts, and the RFPs as well.
Okay.
Next is for Bo, and then we'll go to Mr.
Okay. I have a concern about this. I mean, I've been in the internal auditing business, and separation of duties is always important and a key thing to ask about. But it seems odd to me to recommend hiring additional staff because it's like, well, we need three people because we can't trust two. And so I conceptually don't agree with the idea of hiring another person just to watch, in effect, watch ourselves. If there's a workload, okay, that's one thing. And it goes along the little line, the question that Mary Lee asked, and that is, you know, if there is a need for that, perhaps, as we talked about, contracting with the county for IT assistance and HR assistance, not have someone else from the county spending a couple hours a month looking over what it is we've done. I think we've taken action, and you're doing it as far as, you know, we're seeing the credit card monthly bill itemized every month. Quick look, you got, you know, 13 sets of eyes looking at it. You know, nobody's going out and buying stuff at their, you know, gambling hall or whatever, you know, their favorite vice. And I just, it just strikes me as odd to suggest that, you know, we can't trust two people. So, boy, we better hire a third. That would be my concern. There's a hell of a lot cheaper ways to accomplish that separation of duties.
Well, and I didn't touch on it enough, but it is a workload issue as well. But
that's important to me. I would want to, you know, see, okay, what is that workload that we'd be hiring another person for? Not just, well, you know, we've got to have another person to check over what these two are doing. So.
And if you're comfortable with the idea of us working further with the auditor, then we would come back and present the workload and the cost for you next month. And again, you're not making a decision today. You'll make it then based on what we present.
Mr. Hammond, you want to follow up on that?
Brooks, what I'm trying to get a picture is what you envision your office being at the end. Sounds like four employees. I'm not sure. In other words, we're growing the organization, so to speak. And I'm always a little leery about that because of all the costs. This is not a government, I guess it's not a county agency, so therefore we don't have to pay the same kind of compensation. But on the other hand, still need to keep our costs in check because the taxpayers are the ones that are funding this whole thing. So,
correct.
I think what I'd like to see anyway is when you come back, you know, what you envision your cost to be when you're fully loaded and all your staffing in place, what you feel like you want to see for an office, and let us discuss at that point then.
Okay.
You know, I think what your vision is, or okay. Share with us in between. I mean, we meet so rarely, two months is too far apart, but maybe you might be able to email us kind of in the interim individually what you're thinking so we can give some feedback maybe.
Yeah, and we are meeting every month now. That was a decision that we had made, and we have not changed that decision
as
of yet. Because looking at the workload and looking now that I'm in this position, having seen all of this, we're still going through an immense amount of shifting.
Yeah.
And as you can see from the report, there's kind of policies and procedures that still haven't been implemented, and we don't understand the cost to it. We don't understand the workload to it. And so I think, you know, until we really get to that point as a board of understanding where we're at, we're going to keep these monthly meetings unless the board chooses otherwise.
I agree. I did forget that, Chairman. But even still, anything you want to send in between time,
yeah.
I guess is what I'm trying to get
at.
That's important.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you.
Any further comments? All right.
Okay, and then just to give you an update on our meeting schedule. We've met with almost all of the board members over the last 2 months. We've talked to several of the cities, all of the solid waste vendors, and met with several staff from different cities and communities. Cal Poly had several meetings. I went to, and President Gomez also went to the CRRA conference, and I'll discuss that in a minute. And I serve as the SWANA secretary for the Central District of California and still continue to do that, and also serve on the legislative task force for SWANA, which monitors all the legislative activities regarding solid waste issues. And
do you mind just giving a little explanation of SWANA so everybody kind of has a
sure.
basic understanding of what that is? And
yeah, the Solid Waste Association of North America, which is the United States and Canada, basically. Some other provinces, has a member agency of over 8,000 solid waste professionals, and we have meetings and regular events where we look at legislation, we look at the industry, and it covers the gamut from landfills to recycling to zero waste to compost and organics, whatever. So it's the largest national organization regarding solid waste issues in the country. And the California is the founding chapter, and there are three chapters in the state. I'm in the central chapter, and SLO County is, so I am as well.
So it makes you a very good resource for us.
Yes, it does. And then we met with several of the local coalitions. We're on a few TV articles or pieces, and Patty was on the Dave Congleton show. And then I also gave a presentation to the SLO County City Chamber of Commerce on the polystyrene ordinance, and they actually were supportive of it. And then the coolest thing of all is I've been able to get a meeting with some of the students at Cal Poly in the engineering department, have a club, the Systems Optimization Club. And so I said, hey, you know what? You could look at our system for hauling waste. You could look at our systems for processing recyclables or designing products that actually can be recycled. And all those, anything in between. So we have a meeting next week set up with them, and so we can start getting some kind of dialogue going with the Cal Poly, and that could lead to some great research or partnerships for us. Okay, and then I was going to turn it over to Patty for a few more updates.
Okay, just moving forward on our risk and safety assessment, Public Works did their assessment of the IWMA headquarters, and we did have some violations that we have now corrected. We have all our chemicals in the same location now. We have all our exits marked. We didn't have that. So we are now in compliance. Not only that, but our Cal Fire is inspecting all our HHW facilities as they should every year. South of the grade, they've all been inspected. We still have to do north of the grade, and we're looking to do that in September and October. So far, so good. We do have some issues that we need to take care of, but that's why we're doing a fall refurbishing of all our HHW facilities. Environmental Health, also lovely Environmental Health, inspects us as well. In fact, we just got one last week at Chicago Grade with a new inspector, Austin, and we did have zero violations, so that's an excellent step forward. And again, we'll keep you up to date and posted on all these kinds of things. As Brooks mentioned, we did have our county ID transition. Took roughly 2 to 3 weeks. There were some hiccups, and we did work through all those. And now we are up to snuff, no problems, moving forward. Procurement. We did meet with county procurement, again, in an effort to mirror county policies for all our RFPs and procurement policies moving forward. You'll get more of that in the RFPs that are coming up. I think that's about it. Anything else? No.
And so just to follow up on the CRRA conference, California Resource Recovery Association, this is basically the largest recycling group in the state of California, and I'm also a member of that. And President Gomez and I went to the conference in Palm Springs a few weeks back, and I think the biggest takeaway for me was the SB 1383 information. And so I know you've heard a little bit about that, but I just wanted to kind of talk a minute about it. So I would call it a tectonic shift in how the state and CalRecycle manage recycling in the state of California. And so these are the requirements of the jurisdictions come 2 years from now, and just that long list on the left is what we have to set up, and you have to adopt ordinances and such. And then on the right, those are the ongoing duties. But I just put a little wiggle there on the ones on the left. You have to have an inspection, implement an inspection and enforcement plan, implement an edible food recovery program, and have a system for procuring organic waste products. In other words, we've got to set all that up. And then on the right, there are quite a bit of reporting that's due, and this is not the stuff that we've been used to. This is go out in the field and open lids of garbage cans and determine and make sure that they did not put recyclables in their garbage can, not just put the right recycling in the recycling can. You can't put recyclables in the garbage can, that kind of thing. And so the question would be for us, is this something that we want the individual jurisdictions to handle on their own, or do we want to have a regional approach as an agency? And so that, again, this is 2 years out. The strategic plan will start getting us aligned for this, but I think it's going to be a two-stage process, get an initial assessment of what the board wants for our initial strategic push, and then that will lead to how we approach SB 1383. The second side of and I should also mention, this was not set out to be a organics ban or food waste ban from landfills. It is a short-lived climate pollutants bill. It is supposed to address methane that comes from landfills. And so this is the state's interpretation of how to do that at landfills. And so these are all the retirement requirements on haulers and the facility operators, so the MRFs or the compost facilities. So again, all this is huge. It's going to be an expensive, tedious process to implement for us. And like I said, moving forward, the idea will be, do we want to handle it individually or as an agency? Any questions on 1383?
I kind of have a question for the board as far as how many of your jurisdictions are the cities themselves, or obviously county, have been talking about this? I know the city of SLO has been engaged in the conversation and understanding what's coming down the pipe, but are there cities at all?
Our city manager is aware of it, but we have not had a formal discussion about it at council.
Okay. Yeah. And let me back up 1 second. The biggest hurdle for most places is being able to have a facility that can take the food waste, and we are very fortunate that we have a composting operation and HCI. So we have the facilities to process the material. But the reporting and the ordinances and all of those other components are what we have to implement. We're better off than most because a lot of jurisdictions do not have a place to take it yet. And then the other side of it is once we get this product and we're going to have more organic material that's compost quality, of where are the markets and where can we take it? And we have not, and all jurisdictions are in the same boat on that.
That's always been the problem, is getting enough input to make it work. So now we're having rules and regulations that kind of make that occur.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's basically up to the local jurisdictions, whether we do it or we as cities do it. We're the ones responsible for all of that.
Correct.
So somebody's going to have to handle it. Obviously, it falls on us.
We're responsible as individual jurisdictions, but to some extent, that's what we have an IWMA for, in my mind.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that becomes that question. Do all the jurisdictions want to put that onto another entity that can help handle it for the entire county? Otherwise, our cities are going to have to deal with it regardless.
Right.
And now item 6, if there are no more questions.
Any more questions on number 5?
I had one question. On the merit principles, were those going to come back in policy form to us to review at another time, those recommendations?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, moving on to item number 6. We've got the... Yeah, that's her item, number 6, yeah. That's right.
Get it going the right direction. These are just some examples of recent outreach and education that we've done. You'll see in the very background the little baby with the recycling. That's a help get everybody, that was a direct mail, send out to everybody in the county so that they would be aware that now all the landfills are closed on Sundays in an effort to reduce our illegal dumping problems. The worst thing we can happen is to have somebody load up, get to the dump, find it closed, and then get mad, right? Also, we have a new mattress drop-off recycling location. That brings us up to 3, which is a good thing. We have the Christian thrift shop up over the grade, San Miguel, and now Cool Canyon. It's not that the other Paso Robles landfill and Chicago grade don't take mattresses. They just charge a fee. So it's nice to have a free drop-off location. Again, because of illegal dumping. Central, we're partnering with EcoSlow, and they have 40 pickup locations during this event. And what's really neat about this event is that each one of those pickup locations has a captain. Those captains are being instructed on what's recyclable and what's not so that they can teach all the teams playing at each event location what is recyclable and not. Over here we have DMV recycling. We have 2 different ads up in DMV. One is basically what's recyclable, and the other one talks about used motor oil. And then you can see in the background that we do have the, of course, the standard recycling sticker. Moving forward to all our social media, we just started this. We have Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, all of the above. And we'll come back to you on a quarterly basis to give you the stats on it. Again, we just started it, but it seems like it's moving forward. Just a little refresher, and I know that Brooks went over this, Mike DeMilo's programs, so far to date, and the year has just barely started. He has 287 classroom reservations already booked. He has 45 field trips already booked in 7 community programs. Again, they just do an amazing job on outreach. In the introductory or our focus for this meeting, we mentioned that we have been making some purchases. We do need to make some forklift purchases. We do have 2 pumps out at 2 different HHW facilities that are failing. We've been asked by the Morro Bay and the Napomo HHW facilities to change the signs, modify, get new signs. They're just not working, so we've been getting bids on all of these things. And then you may have been in an email string about the Napomo transfer. The Napomo transfer station. A gentleman took in his cardboard and he was charged for dropping off his cardboard and he was very upset. So we've been working with the Chicago Grade landfill. How can we get people to drop off stuff at the Napomo transfer station and it still be free? She said, just give me a container. So I'm getting bids for containers. Well, that way moving forward, if anybody has cardboard they need to drop off at that transfer station, it's free. Next up, CRV recycling. It's a program that's been around for a long time. As you can see, it has quite an annual budget and reserves. And then, as everybody on this panel knows, the CRV centers started closing back in 2013. And then just more recently, we just had a major closing And now we're really down to four centers in this county, and I really hate to say four because it's really not four. Has anybody been down to the Oceano one during open hours? It's always closed. And then we only have one in Los Osos, and he's only open on Saturday, even though the requirements require extended hours. So maybe we're down to three and two. We have one up in Paso Robles. And then we have one way up in Cambria across from Cookie Croc. That's it. So as a board, we need to take a look at this. Yes, it's a state program, but on a local level, should we do anything? Maybe, maybe not. That's something that you guys might want to take a look at. 70-plus grocery stores in this county have signed affidavits saying that if a recycling center closes in their area, they would be willing to take these bottles and cans back. However, they all signed them when there were centers, so it was kind of like, blah, 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 right? Now the reality is, and we're getting emails, phone calls from these grocery stores, from concerned citizens saying, look, I tried to take it into Rite Aid, CVS, Ralph's, and they're turning me away. So we somehow need to work through this problem. Again, it's a state issue, but we might want to take a look at it at a local level. Oops, wrong one. And then, this is the big elephant in the room. What we're doing is narrowing our message on plastics. This is the same sticker. It's been here the entire time that I've worked for the IWMA, which is pushing 12 years now. Specifically, plastics. We're going to focus on the messaging to the outreach to the public. It's really rigid plastics with a neck. Consistent messaging. If you have film plastic or bags that go on your bread or any other kind of plastic like that, take it back to the grocery store, and that includes Rite Aids and CVS's. Single-use disposables. Now, the board had asked us to bring back, maybe discuss this briefly. But when we took a look at it, there are literally thousands of single-use disposables. Everything from diapers all the way to really important medical equipment, right? And thousands of things in between. What we need to do is settle on what the board wants us to do on this. Should we look at the top 10 litter items in the county, or maybe it's the top 10 litter items globally, or maybe it's the most problematic litter items? Is it if it's not recyclable, we should look at it? So what we kind of want at the agency is some direction from the board to, do we take a look at this? What do you want to narrow it to? What are the timing on it? Should we do it the next board meeting? Should we couple it in with the strategic plan? We need a little direction. And with that, I'll take any questions.
You want that direction now?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a big discussion. I mean, to start off, something that I obviously spend a lot of time in this world of trying to figure out what we can utilize. We know that one in two plastics are recyclable, the most recyclable. Everything else kind of falls off the spectrum. Hence, you know, we're having a discussion later about polystyrene because that is a non-recyclable item. So the question, I guess, for us that we have to ask ourselves is, which, we know plastic bags are an issue. We know that small packaging is an issue. And, you know, where do you want to come into it from in that sense that we're going to have the most bang for our buck in the sense of actually being able to accomplish something at our local level, and what are your jurisdictions having issues with? I meet with the haulers on a regular basis, and you know, source reduction is the number one issue with recycling. So this is kind of our chance to take that on.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
For me, it would be, you know, we have certain legal requirements we need to meet as far as diversion and that sort of thing, in which source reduction can play a role. So that's probably most important. Then secondly, kind of, it's hard to read, it's a little small, but you, Patty, specifically mentioned, you know, top 10 items around the county versus globally.
Yeah.
I'd be far more focused on what happens in our county. I think, you know, for example, the plastic bag ban has been effective because you just see far less of those around. And if you participate in creek cleanups and things like that, you see far less of them. You know, something that might be happening somewhere else in the world, it doesn't make sense to me to, you know, ban that thing here if it's a largely non-existent problem here. I'd be far more focused and be interested in talking about how do we do things that increase diversion here and or decrease litter in our community.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, again, in North Town anyway, we're more driven by constituents' requirements. In other words, what they're asking for.
Yeah.
I haven't had a whole lot of people saying, you know, let's get rid of the straws and pass rolls anyway. I understand it, but I think what we should be concentrating on is the low-hanging fruit. I think we, you know, the bigger things that can be hit, and as we move forward through the process over time, you know, a lot of the other things will just change anyway. But to take on this and make more regulation is something I don't think I'd be wanting to see, but be able to listen to everybody else too.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's some rational policy reasons to get after this, and as we were teeing up styrene at our last meeting, we did indicate that we were going to start working on single use after we did that. I mean, this is a huge policy level issue that I think deserves its own place on our agenda, perhaps even a subcommittee that would look at it. And basic pieces of information is what is our waste stream? What are we looking at, and what do we need to go after? Along with looking at what other jurisdictions have done, because we're far from the forefront of this at this point. And so, you know, getting a little of this background information to tee up a set of regulations makes sense to me. I mean, and whereas the constituents may not be, you know, asking for this because it's just part of their daily lives, we have a responsibility in managing the waste stream here that puts us in a position of needing to lead on this, or be useful for us to lead on this at the very least. So I would think, you know, working around the other things that staff has, or working into the other workflow that staff has, is to start getting the baseline information and looking at how we structure it, what is we can do, what it is we should do, and bring that back for discussion. You know, let's incrementalism versus revolution, right? Mm-hmm. Let's get polystyrene on the books and let's hit it hard after we do that.
Mr. Lee?
I was just going to kind of echo kind of both sides of that. I think in my mind, as I've been wandering around in there talking to myself, the strategic plan was always the location where I thought this type of direction would come from, because that then allows us to then budget appropriately for whatever programs we want to come forward. That we had talked about a grant program, we had talked about what can we do to address the recycling or lack of recycling buyback facilities. And so I've always seen it as the strategic plan and part of that. And maybe the question becomes is, as we present the strategic plan, is there an intent to have a study session at the board or an ad hoc committee, or maybe that's part of a discussion that we have, as well as how we're going to formulate that program outreach.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe guiding, before we have any more comment, I guess the question that we can answer right now, do we want a separate study session for single use, or do we want it folded into the strategic plan? Because, I mean, there's the question, you can have the study session up front to narrow down the materials to put into the strategic plan, or you can fold it all into the strategic plan.
Yeah, I'd like to say I support Supervisor Gibson's perspective and comments on this completely. I see single-use plastic as an urgent issue, and I think that we should address the four items that are remaining that are not part of this polystyrene action, which is listed in a number of letters to the agency here. So that we address foam meat trays and egg cartons, encapsulated marine buoys, and the four items there that are of urgent concern, in my opinion, and we should make it all one kind of action that we all review with committees or however that's typically done, but I'd like to see us move forward on all of that.
No, I appreciate the many comments. For me, being new to the board 7-8 months, I'm finding that I'm learning much more than I ever thought I needed to know about recycling, and I'm finding that it's much more confusing than I expected as well. And I think any study session we can have would be educational for me personally, but anybody that's listening and has an interest in learning more. So in that direction, I think I would appreciate something like that even prior to the strategic plan. Then maybe that will even help us focus and detail some things even further.
Yeah, and hearing everybody's comments, kind of where I'm leaning with this too, is looking at it prior to the strategic plan, so we're not trying to inundate the strategic plan with too much, taking on too many different items. I mean, knowing what we deal with at our various recycling plants, plastic bags are the number one issue that they struggle with. We all heard that at our retreat. It's a policy that we already have in place, and it's something that I think we can fold into that study session, is where is that policy lacking since it was done in 2012, and what has come from then till now, and then look at some of the other items that are low-hanging fruit that we can really make a difference in.
And it's not just policy, it's ordinance. And I have to make a true confession. I carried my burrito back to the office in a single-use plastic bag. I'm sorry. I put it in the right bin, though, when I was done with it. So I think, yeah, I know. It's just the end of my political career, Mr. Allen.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's the nature of the study session. What can we add on to? What do we need to step out and do new? And let's do it as soon as we can get staff to bring it to us.
Okay. And we do have some public comment on this item. Do you need to do any more on the report before public comment?
I had a question for her. If Patty's done, I had an unrelated question. If you go back, Patty, to the label. Although it was the recycling label, you also gave out labels for green waste and regular trash. I mean, the decals. And the decal, I believe, for green waste showed you could put food products in there.
That's correct.
Including things like meats. I mean, not just dry
meats
foods
and bones,
grains,
yeah,
and stuff, but you could put in meats and
correct
all kinds of food in there.
Correct.
So I called my hauler as a customer. Didn't say I'm an IWA board member. Called my hauler as a customer, and they said, oh, no, we're not ready for that. Mm-hmm. And I know in talking to our North County or Mid-State Recycling, they're ready for it because, you know, they've got the whole setup to take food waste and mix it in with green waste. So I'm wondering, when you guys have a monthly hauler meeting, is that being conveyed? I mean, because I don't see it being a problem for the hauler.
Right, and you're talking about waste management right now?
Right.
And Dan Harris was not at the last meeting, but I did convey some messaging that I got, just the same message, to him via email, and he's definitely going to step up the game there and get the message clear to his staff as well.
So as far as you know, every hauler in the county, except perhaps that one, is or should be taking food waste in the green waste bins.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And if you hear otherwise, I would be happy to discuss it.
Thank you guys for that discussion. So first up on item number 6 is Donald Hendrick. And then following him, we've got Eric Greene.
And excuse me, Mr. Chair, just to be clear, I would take public comment on all reports, executive director report and item number 6.
Okay.
Same time.
Yeah, just the only one that we have.
Don Hendrick, Sacramento Drive. Recycling is not a sin, but the hell that we're being put through to do our recycling, a vital source of income for a lot of people in our county, has been disrupted. The source of the recycle is not the problem. The destination for it is. And the destination should not be miles and miles of gasoline-powered transport to haul it to the far corners of the county or the next county. Scrooge's associate, Marley, was famous for having a train of chains of his sins in life. But this is not our sins. We need to have a way of efficiently collecting and destining our recycle. Yesterday I went to 5 places and was turned down. 2 Rite Aids, another one in their foothill area, and the gas station. And I even went to Ralph's, but repelled at every one of them. Rite Aid in the foothill had 1 Gaylord box to last all week, and it was stacked 8 feet tall in that box, and they couldn't take any more. And I looked in their back room, and it was miniature. These retail places are not set up to handle recycle. It forces undue requirements of virgin plastic bags that will get one use. And there's no standard of what's to package and take. We need a standard of operation. We need to have a reliable destinations that aren't so far away. But I don't think it's the right thing to enforce the retailers to take the recycle back. Well, they're fined. If they don't, where does that money go? What rat hole does that go? Follow the money, maybe? Now, the markets collect money and turn it over to the state. What rat hole does that go? It should be coming back to solve the problem. Perhaps we could get a finger on the taxes that are being paid, but and perhaps get an allocation of those taxes that, and the recycling is a tax now. It taxes our energies. So we need to have our taxes auditable and transparent, and we know where things are going, and it needs to come back to our localities and solve the problem here. Perhaps those fines could be earmarked for local use and not keeping some Sacramento politician's pockets diverting to their special projects. It shouldn't be a special project. It should be kept to the recycle system.
Thank you, Mr. Hendrick. After Mr. Greening, we've got Judith, looks like Benton. Right after Mr. Greening, you're up.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I think one way to approach this, yes, let's get polystyrene off our plates right away, and then looking at this, a good way to approach a study session would be to research what is working in other jurisdictions. Where are there jurisdictions that the various businesses involved, the retail, the restaurants, etc., have bought in, and it's operating smoothly, and learn from ordinances in those jurisdictions so it can actually be a study session not only on the consequences of disposal, you know, and their pervasiveness in the environment, but on the effectiveness of solutions where they are effective. And I would like to add sort of the whole question of retail packaging in general. I remember when you could go to a hardware store, there would be bins you could get as many nails as you needed out of the bin, as many screws, even screwdrivers. Now it's gotten to where even things like combs, you can't simply pick up a comb. There are like 10 combs in a plastic sack tied to a cardboard box. This has been kind of a constant creep. It can't be good for the retailers. I mean, all of this stuff has a cost. It's useless to the customer. So are there jurisdictions in which retail has called a truce on this and gone back to the old way? Are there ordinances that bring it about, or just agreements that bring it about? But let's look at the massive, massive proliferation of retail packaging that is completely unnecessary, and I know it is simply because it didn't exist a generation or two ago, and it undoubtedly adds to the cost of doing business as well as the huge environmental cost that most of it does end up as waste, either in a landfill or scattered around the landscape. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Judith Bernstein. I live in Arroyo Grande, right across the street from a former recycling center. It was in the same shopping center, Smart and Final, and the dollar store. And people used to line up. I wouldn't go over when I saw 50 people in line. However, that shows how popular it was, and that was every day of the week. Since that center closed, I now have a new hobby called picking up plastic bottles on the street. I used to do it at the beach, and now it's littering the streets. So anything that can incentivize people to do the right thing with what plastic we currently have, I would love to see it come back in more locations. The second is a problem I discussed with Patty some years ago. I wrote an article on the new composting plant, and she gave me a bin to take back to where I live, and I live in an apartment with 108 units. And when I asked the owner why all our green waste was put in the garbage, she said, because we don't want to have to roll the green bins out to the street, which made no sense to me because the garbage was picked up in the recycling in the same place as the green bins. So I wish there was a way to find people who have an option to provide their residents and apartment buildings with recycling and with compostables, and make those green bins really usable. I don't know if there's a law about it, but it's certainly in large apartment buildings like mine. That's pretty large. If people and our gardeners were using those green bins, it would certainly add a lot less to the landfill. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, no further public comment. Did you still need direction on the take-back program from the board as far as where you want to see us take this? As far as in where staff, what we want to employ staff to do as far as outside of things?
Is that on? I think it's somewhere between do nothing, petition the state, or do you want us to look at trying to operate a center? I mean, that's the range of options. Yeah, I mean,
the low-hanging fruit to me is first start with the state. What are the funds and how come they're not being released on a basis that keeps this going? And two, working with the retailers that are already signed contracts to have to take these things back. And then three, I know that some of the waste facilities here have been trying to figure out an avenue to better get take-back programs. I mean, that, again, going back to the low-hanging fruit part of things, take-back programs are the one thing that recycling, it actually worked, because you have, it's already a stream that's dedicated to those specific items, versus when you throw in the blue bin, there's no guarantee, even if it's recyclable, that it's going to make it through the process. So,
My comment was going to be, even before the folks spoke, that I would like to see this come back. I mean, along the lines of what Member Hammond addressed, I don't get people coming up and talking to me about straws or this, that, and the other thing, but ever since the center, recycling center or turnback center in Tascadero closed, you very frequently will get comments about that because it represented several hundred thousands. I think it was $600,000 or $800,000 of cash money that went into the pockets of folks, mostly poor people, who collected cans as a source of income, and were performing a public service and keeping the streets clean. So I think for me, this is a very important thing. I don't know if there's anything realistically we can do in the environment we're in to try to bring back functioning turnback centers in our larger communities, but I'd certainly like to see, I'm willing to have staff spend some time, you know, looking at if there's anything we can do at our level about that.
Any other comments?
Yes, I agree. It seems a shame since most of the population is now habituated to recycling and trying, at least they're making an effort to do something right. Although I think most of my people thought that plastic bags were recyclable and they all end up in the blue can. But I think if there's any way at all that we can get some money together and reestablish these centers, this seems to me to be obvious that that's what we have to do. We've got to get the public to come back out and do what they want to do, and that is give it to somebody who's going to do something with it.
And I'm really interested also to learn more about the vending machine model. I know that it has worked in European cities, at least certain jurisdictions. I don't know to what extent, but anything that you make easy for people, you're more likely to get people to participate. I know if there was just a vending machine and I didn't have to take things and, you know, deal with waiting in line or dropping off, it would be far easier to just throw your cans in, you get your money back, and move on. So if there's anything viable within that realm that's cost-effective for this jurisdiction, I think it would be nice to at least hear.
I wanted to add one more thing. I just got back from Alaska, and they have outlawed those plastic bottles of water. They were using these dandy aluminum cans with necks in them, and beautiful cans. I brought one back for my city council to look at, but it can be done. Obviously, they had decided, no, we're not doing the plastic bottle thing anymore, and they simply said, that's it. We're not doing it. So it can be done.
Thank you. All right, so now we are moving on to the consent calendar. We can move approval all at once. If there are any items that people want to see pulled for further discussion, let yourself be known now.
I just had a question on number 9, the Special District Risk Management Authority. It said this refers to health benefits, and I read it, but I recall when we hired Mr. Stayer, you know, we talked about a stipend or whatever to help pay for health insurance. Who are we addressing with this? I don't know how Patty's health insurance might be paid for, if at all. Okay. And so I'm wondering, it sounds like it's just an update reading it. You know, it's just an updated document. But are we utilizing the services of this organization to obtain health insurance for any of you?
Correct. I was unaware that this program existed for anyone or IWMA, but yes, it is a consortium of special districts throughout the state of California, and we are members of it, and so they have limited plans, but they do offer health care for us, for IWMA, and they require an MOU for us to execute. There's no money involved in this portion there. It still is money that we're paid through our contracts, and then we pay them.
So you're taking the money we sent you, they're compensating you with for this purpose, and
right, and you can pick from the plan options they have, correct.
Paying a premium to them. Okay. In that sense, I'm wondering that whether it would have made more sense for us to match the compensation to one of these plans.
And that's something that we can consider moving forward with.
Okay. In the future, that we might want to address that. Thank you.
Yes.
Any further questions? Anybody want to make a motion on the consent?
Any public comment?
Sorry. We do need public comment. I have nothing up here. So wave your hands, jump up and down. No. All right.
So moved. Second.
We got a first and a second. Let's do a roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Blake?
Yes.
Director Bourbeau?
Yes.
Director Heller?
Yes.
Director Enns?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
Aye.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Storton?
Yes.
President Gomez?
Yes. With that, it passes unanimously. All right, our first business item, number 11, request for IWMA sponsorship, policy and procedures, A2 update.
As you can see, this policy is from a little bit back, 1997. It allowed the IWMA to spend $50 for, for several years, this policy has been ignored. We no longer ignore, so we want to update. And moving forward, we'd like to update this policy to reflect that we can increase the sponsorship up to $5,000. And then if it's a second signatory for a warrant request larger than $1,000. And as you can see in your board packet, there are two examples of where this comes in really handy, i.e. the SWANA legislative platform. And then California Product Stewardship, both have strong influences in Sacramento, and both are very helpful moving forward this county's mission.
Any questions from the board? Mr. Enns?
I'm sorry, I was confused about item E. It says the executive director can decide on requests for up to $5,000, but he needs a second signature for one that's $1,000. So that was rather confusing to me. So what does that mean?
So moving forward, what we'd like to do to be able to take on some of these things is do up to a $5,000, but have in a added precaution that the board president would sign anything over $1,000.
But he's free to authorize $5,000, but not $1,000? I'm confused.
It requires a second signature.
Yeah, it just wouldn't have to come back to the full board. You can go up to $5,000, but anything over $1,000, I would still have to sign.
And reading the old one, we're going from $50 to $5,000?
Correct. That's from 1997, so we are...
Just yesterday.
...updating it a little bit.
All right. Thank you. I got it.
You're welcome.
Mr. Burbell?
My question is, when I think of sponsorships, I'm thinking in terms of like sponsoring events. These almost sound like more like, these two items here today sound almost more like memberships. Because SWANA is like a professional organization of people in this business. I one of my questions is, what is the California Product Stewardship Council? What we're paying is an associate fee, which, like I said, sounds more like a membership than a sponsorship.
Well, these are not necessarily, there's sponsorships where, for example, Brooks has and I have individual memberships. These are more for legislative platforms, so it's a bit broader. It's not just, like for the SWANA, it really digs into the legislative side of it. And same with the California Product Stewardship. I don't necessarily have a membership with California Product Stewardship, but as a whole, they work on legislative platforms that are very helpful for us. Everything from CRV all the way through the broad spectrum of maybe it's cigarettes, maybe it's plastics, maybe it's whatever that is. They're really in the forefront to help us on these legislative issues in Sacramento.
Okay, that's fine.
Are you saying they're lobbyists? Are you saying that they're lobbyists?
I'm saying that they have lobbyists employed. Okay.
Okay. They're also, though, keeping you abreast of legislation in this area, right? They're
not absolutely. Just,
so, I mean, joining them is not necessarily, you know, an advocacy relationship. It's a, you know, an informational relationship. I guess what I'm getting at is, to me, sponsorship is sort of something different. It's like if you know, IWMA is a sponsor at some event that's
like
being
Creek
held in, Creek. Exactly.
Camp, right.
Perfect example. That's a sponsorship to me, whereas these are more professional memberships or memberships and associations. So I just want to make sure I understood what the CPSC does. So I'm satisfied. Thank you.
Aaron, down here.
Yeah,
Patty, is this for non-budgeted items? In other words, these sponsorships are not really in our budget. You're asking if someone approaches IWMA, this would be outside our budget line?
Or no, it would not
approved?
Be outside the budget line. It would
right.
be inside. So
this is
moving
something we've
forward,
already basically
we
approved. You're just right. signing off. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Well, I mean, we've approved a budget line, but you're approving individual things within that budget line and,
exactly.
and within these thresholds above which
higher
you'd have to come to us. Gotcha.
Correct.
Thank you.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise everything over $50 would have to come back to us. Is that correct?
Yes, and again, we weren't doing that in the past, and we are now going to be doing that.
Mr. Lee?
Sure. Just to kind of piggyback off of Mr. Barbeau's question, is do we just change the name of the policy and the procedure to request for IWMA sponsorships/memberships? And maybe that clarifies what for staff what can fall under this policy.
Yeah, I think I would like the clarity too.
Yeah, I think that would be very appropriate.
Yeah.
I was going to make a motion and we approve the item, yep. But I guess we might have to offer public comment first.
Second.
Currently, we don't have any public comment, so.
Oh, yeah. We need to open that, too. Yeah.
Public comment is now closed.
Okay. Make that motion that we approve this item.
Got a second. First and a second?
Yeah.
With the name change?
Yes. Okay. With the update?
Yes, with the change in title that we discussed.
Okay. Just for the sake of time, let's everybody up for all in one vote. All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
I am.
We have one opposition.
Yes.
All right. Ms. Blake?
Can I clarify, too, the name for the policy is sponsorship/membership policy. Is that correct?
Slash membership.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, moving on to item number 12, approved two-step RFP process for annual audit, revenue audit, and strategic plan.
Okay, just to review these, we have three RFPs. We have not been doing these in the past, but we are now getting bids for work. And so the first one is a annual audit of the IWMA's expenses, so relatively routine. The second one is an audit of our revenue that we get from the haulers and from the landfills. And again, this has never been done, but it is, we think, necessary, and it levels the playing field of all the parties. This is not going to follow trucks around and do a hardcore audit of the routes and things. This is just going to be paperwork in the office and seeing that their revenue matches what they send the checks for. The third one is the strategic plan, and that's two phases. One is to gather the board's opinion on what our policies should be and what our mission statement would be. And then the second phase would be to take that and then to develop solid waste programs or policies or a plan to implement that strategy of the mission. And so what we have before you today is a two-step process. The first is that you would approve the RFPs and the contract that are in the packet in front of you, and then we will put those out on the street. And then the phase two, when those come back in, we will rank those, and you would approve the ranking and then negotiating with the executive committee and the president to sign a contract with those selected vendors. And the reason we'd rank them is if it falls through with the first ranked vendor, we would go to the second ranked. And this way, it's you get two bites at the apple, but at the same time, you don't keep drawing this out and bringing it back individually at each step.
Have any questions?
I just had one quick question, and I see each of these RFPs are going to be posted on the IWMA website. So what other outreach are we planning to get as good of a response to the RFPs as possible?
We plan on talking to county procurement and seeing if they have any other suggestions tomorrow if you approve these.
Thank you.
My question regarding the strategic plan. When we were discussing the budget, Mr. Giancola, as the interim director, brought forth three kind of levels, if you will, of potential strategic plan. We budgeted the full amount for the larger scope, but I thought we were going to potentially have another discussion as to how in depth of a scope we were going to do, because I recall that we budgeted up to $150,000 for that, which to me seemed like a lot of money for a strategic plan for an organization of this size. And so I'm wondering, you know, in terms of this scope that's listed in this RFP, how is that arrived at?
Prior experience has taught me that it will take quite a bit of time to gather the opinions of 13 different board members about what their vision, values, and mission will be, and then extrapolating what our current capabilities are of this entire county and all the haulers and all the jurisdictions, because they're going to come back and tell us this is what your capabilities are as a region, not individually, but aggregate. And then bringing back strategies for you to review and approve or not, that, and do it all in a short time frame. We would like all this done within 9 to 12 months to be from start to finish.
So okay. But this is a fairly all-encompassing scope. I assume this is going for the full boat, if you will, of what was being considered?
Correct.
Okay.
It would take us right up into implementing SB 1383 issues. I would like it to go up to deciding whether we want to handle it as a regional agency or independently, but not actually implement it. So it would take us right up to the threshold of what we actually want to do.
Okay, because if we're going to spend that kind of money, I very much would like it to include, and I think it's very smart to include aspects of implementing 1383. So thank you.
Correct.
Mr. Hamm?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brooks, I thought I heard you right, that you were going to have the RFP go out, rank them, and then have the executive committee sign off on it, or are you bringing it back to the full board?
When they come back to you, they will be ranked, and then you will approve that ranking. And as the result of that, then that will allow the executive committee and the board president to negotiate and sign the contract.
Okay, I see. But we're still going to get an eye on it. My point is
correct. You will have seen the RFPs now, and then you will see the vendors selected and the prices.
Okay, good.
Any further questions? Any public comment? Not seeing any. Close to that.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Got a first and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? No. Passes. Number 13, amendment to executive director's employment contract.
And that is you.
You want me to take it?
Yes, please.
Chairman Gomez, members of the board. When Mr. Stayer was hired, his employment contract, as you recall, had an option in it for $450 a month to go towards a lease of an electric vehicle. When Mr. Stayer started actually looking into how he could implement that, he did want to participate in promotion of the district and leasing of an electric vehicle, but it became burdensome because of just kind of the logistics of dealing with a lease. And so this is a request by Mr. Stayer to suggest that his contract be amended to simply give him $450 a month that he can use towards paying for a personal vehicle that would be an electric vehicle rather than just a reimbursement on a lease. And part of that is that he'll have to make a down payment, and then the car will be in his name, et cetera. So if there's any questions, I will entertain them, but I think it's pretty straightforward.
Any questions?
Yeah. What's usual and customary for a normal employee? In other words, I know that we don't get anywhere close to that. So 400 versus, I think, more reasonable. I'm not sure what is a standard with regard to traffic. Is it with the county? Yeah, I'm not really sure what you're typically allowed to do in this case.
Anything
but
speed.
Okay.
Well,
And in our original contract, we also changed that number to incentivize the electric side of things. So when we, as a board, basically opted for that negotiation.
Right. I remember talking about it, but that was also for an electric vehicle, too, which is a little different than what would be used here, but
this would only be for an electric vehicle. There would be a restriction on Mr. Stayer would need to purchase an electric vehicle.
Okay, all right.
So, and from my experience, $450 a month is not out of the range of normal.
All right. Okay.
Any public comments? Seeing none. Closed. Anybody want to make a motion?
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? Passes. Number 14, resolution 2000. I'm not even going to read that, to authorize executive director to take all necessary actions in emergency situations.
Thank you. And if we could have the projector again. So we have five HHW sites that are not on our property. They are all leased. And We want the ability to be able to address a catastrophe that would happen and take immediate action to prevent further contamination or loss of life or some other circumstance. And what drew this to my mind was the picture on the right, and you see that's the 101 and then a frontage road in Napomo. And if a vehicle on the 101 or on that frontage road just didn't make the turn or got off the road, they could drive right through the fence and smash through our HHW facility and our lockers and create fire spill or whatever. And so we recommend that you consider a policy that allows us to expend funds to clean up a spill or mitigate some type of catastrophe up to $200,000, and if we need more to go to $300,000, we would go through the board president and then come back and report to you on what happened.
Any questions? No questions?
No.
All right. Public comment? Seeing none. Anybody want to make a motion?
Move approval.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Roll
call. Oh, sorry. Roll call. I tried. Really.
Okay. Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Blake?
Yes.
Director Borbo?
Yes.
Director Heller?
Yes.
Director Enns?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
Aye.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Storton?
Yes.
President Gomez?
Yes.
Passes.
So now we're going to get into the meat of it. We do have about 30 minutes of public comment. Does the board want to take a 5-minute nature break before we get into this?
Yes.
All right. We will be taking a 5-minute break. We'll be back at, looks like, 3:10. So as soon as we have staff again, we will commence with item 15, an ordinance regulating polystyrene and expanded polystyrene food containers and products.
And if we could have the PowerPoint again.
Oh, yeah. Roll call, is that what you're asking? Oh,
okay, just a little refresher. The July board meeting asked us to bring back a polystyrene ordinance, and they asked us to mirror the San Luis Obispo City ordinance with the addition of egg cartons, meat trays, and marine buoys. Another addition was to include in and out of county packaged food goods, and there are some exclusions For example, if somebody purchases something on Amazon and it's delivered to your house, those are not included. Let's say you went to Idler's and purchased a water heater, washer, dryer, whatever. Those are delivered to your home, encased in styrofoam. That's not included. Or if you happen to be, I don't know, like a building contractor, and you have a suite of appliances delivered to a construction site, that's not included. Okay? There are the exceptions, mirror the Slow County, or excuse me, the Slow City Ordinance. And we need direction moving forward. Number one, did we capture what you wanted us to capture? Specific items, what's in, what's out? Implementation timelines, did we capture that right for you? And are the exemptions what you want to see? And are the fines what you are interested in moving forward? Now, we know there's going to be some hardships. That's completely accurate. Some businesses are going to be affected more than others. There are going to be challenges. You'll notice in your packet there's a letter from the poultry producers who are challenging this. They are not happy. Another challenge that we have to look at as a group is the outreach and education for the entire county. A little bit easier when it's smaller in a condensed city. Again, this is a countywide ordinance. Some cities have already adopted it, but we still would need to do county-wide outreach. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board?
I have several questions, but I'd be willing to wait till after we hear public testimony.
So yeah, I mean, if there's no pressing questions, we can go straight to that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to open up to public comment. First, individuals. Barry Rands, followed by Eric Greening, and then Cynthia Repuglier. Definitely botched the name, but.
Chairman Gomez and board members, Barry Rands, resident of San Luis Obispo, city of San Luis Obispo. And I would like to, first of all, read a letter from the owner of the Big Sky Cafe. He couldn't be at this meeting, but asked this be read at the meeting. Big Sky Cafe phased out polystyrene foam and foam containers in the 1990s. While there was an initial financial challenge at the time, pulp paper and hard plastic was 50 to 200% more expensive, but they made the choice to do so. Over these last two decades, we have seen the prices of paper pulp-to-go containers, along with the hard, recyclable plastic containers, decline in relationship to polystyrene and foam, as the greater demand for pulp paper products with new users coming on board created new producers and suppliers of pulp paper items. Economics 101, high demand equals higher prices creates new producers. We also found that our customers, who were inclusive of the entire San Luis Obispo County, were grateful and respectful that we chose to walk this line. Supervisors, please remember that during the 1990s, Big Sky Cafe was the, quote, budget gourmet farm-to-table restaurant in your area. You could have a nice meal here with a glass of wine or beer for under $10. We found that making this change, while expensive, it was also priceless, and so did our guests, your constituents. Doing the right thing is always costly in the beginning and often challenging, but in the end, always worth doing. Sorry that I can't be at the meeting, but family comes first. Respectfully yours, Greg Holt. And then a personal comment. I highly encourage a yes vote on this. And when you do your outreach, I would recommend one thing. I thought the restriction on the compostable bioplastics was a little bit unclear in there. It was kind of buried in one of the definitions. So in your cover letter outreach, make sure that's clear that the people or that the vendors can't use those compostable products that get mixed up in the recycling stream. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening. Please pass the most comprehensive ban you can to achieve maximum reduction of the volume of this pollutant. And I believe Janine Rands has done some research to help you get to exactly the sweet spot with this ordinance. The threatening paradox of polystyrene, most pollutants are either inert and persistent or they are volatile and emissive. Polystyrene is both. It can persist almost endlessly. I mean, we don't know yet how endlessly it can persist in many, many circumstances, get distributed widely through the environment, but it is also subject to photodegradation. If it's in sunlight, it can crumble in such a way that the styrene is released, and then it's basically a toxic bomb. And as for the impacts on styrene, there's information available at the EPA's Integrated Risk Information System and the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry's Toxicological Profile for Styrene. Impacts can include headache, fatigue, weakness, depression, affecting the reaction time, memory, accuracy of motor response to visual stimuli, intellectual function, hearing loss, and peripheral neuropathy. At heavier exposures, you get effects on the liver, the kidneys, and respiration. This may, for most of us, be just one of these subtle things that we hardly notice, except that maybe life doesn't have the quality that it ought to have. But for some people, it can be the straw that breaks the health. And we're not just talking about people. Wildlife is disappearing throughout the planet, and a lot of, you know, this burden could be affecting them in many of the same ways. And minor neurological impairment can mean losing the struggle for survival. So the responsible thing to do is, when there is a very persistent source of styrene pollution that can migrate far and wide in the environment and then be released when exposed to sunlight, that is the most dangerous possible combination. We have the precedent of many, many jurisdictions here and farther away that have successfully implemented ordinances to contain this damage, to contain this menace, and I think it's time for these ordinances to be harmonized countywide so that the entire Central Coast starts to get a lid on this huge problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. Cynthia Riplogle.
Yeah, I'm Cynthia Riplogle, a director on the Oceano Community Services District, but I do not speak in any official capacity. I'm also vice chair of our county's chapter of Surf Rider. I've been doing beach cleanups with Surf Rider for many years, but the cleanup that made the most impression on me was a 100-plus volunteer event in the Tijuana River Valley. A mind-blowing amount of trash tossed out in Mexico makes its way downhill and ends up in the estuary, where it flows out to sea during winter rains if no one picks it up. Fortunately, we have a much smaller litter problem here. During that cleanup, I tried to pick up a styrofoam plate, maybe used for 10 minutes at some backyard barbecue. It had been sitting out in the sun for a while, which made it frangible. When my gloved hand closed on it, it crumbled into several pieces. I tried to pick up the pieces, and they broke into more pieces. I tried again to scoop them up, but it was hopeless. The slightest touch crumbled the plastic into ever smaller fragments. I could not remove that plastic plate from the environment. When the rains came, it would wash into the river and then into the sea, where fish and birds could mistake those fragments for food, filling their bellies with litter that provided no nutrition and might cause them to starve and die. But someone got to eat dinner and not wash the dishes. For too long, we've been living in a disposable society where we use plastics for minutes that linger in the environment for decades or even centuries. We've been duped by the plastics industry, the fossil fuel industry, since that is what plastics are made of, into thinking recycling is the answer, when many types of plastics were never recycled and others no longer are. We throw lots of plastic things into the blue bins, hoping that they'll be recycled. It's time to realize, when we throw things away, that there is no away. Companies that are accustomed to using cheap polystyrene products may complain, but the world got along just fine before all this plastic came along. A 2017 UC Santa Barbara study found that half of the plastic ever made was produced in just the last 13 years. There are alternative products available that don't have polystyrene's detrimental environmental and human health effects. Those health effects include leaching of toxic chemicals into food stored or heated in plastic. In 31 years, there will be more plastic in the seas than fish by weight. Our oceans, our planet, are drowning in plastics. It's time to stem the flow, and this ordinance is a good first step. Please vote to enact Ordinance 2019-1 and hold a workshop to move forward on restricting other types of single-use plastics. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Molly Kern, followed by Janine Ranz, followed by Dr. Joe Morris.
Good afternoon, President Gomez, directors. My name is Molly Kern, and I'm here today speaking to you on behalf of the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. We represent nearly 1,400 businesses and their 38,000 employees throughout the San Luis Obispo County region. First, I'd like to take a moment and thank your team for coming to present to our Legislative Action Committee earlier this summer. It was an informative presentation not only on this ordinance, but also on the basics of recycling and the capacities of our county's recycling center and landfill. As we considered our position on this ordinance, we had four guiding concerns. First, that the ordinance not unintentionally incentivize retailers to carry out-of-area products over something that's locally packaged. Second, that any program or ordinance include supportive on-ramps, education, and resources to ensure a smooth transition. That the rules be equally enforced across all jurisdictions, ensuring an even playing field. And that the ordinance include a formal, easy-to-use process for legitimate hardship exemptions. As we value environmentally sustainable business practices, the Chamber is encouraging you to adopt a plan that starts by unifying all jurisdictions in our county under the existing Slow City Expanded Polystyrene Ordinance. And secondly, to establish a clear date for the total ban of polystyrene and other single-use plastics. A clear multi-year runway will enable us the smoothest transition toward this important and overarching goal. This program must also include proactive education. While marketing and awareness campaigns can come in many shapes and sizes, we believe that it is essential that this one include clear metrics quantifying success in educating business, residents, and visitors regarding the recycling and disposal of polystyrene and other single-use plastic items. People cannot participate and help to achieve a goal that they are unclear about or that is confusing. And we need to make sure that not only is the information out there, but that it's heard by the people who need to be participating. Finally, we'd like to encourage you and the IWMA to explore technology that will enable Slo County to recycle more materials than our facility currently allows. Thank you for considering the input from the business community and for carefully considering the details of the ordinance in front of you this afternoon.
Thank you. Ms. Ranz?
Good afternoon, Chamber and Board members. I'm Janine Ranz, Chair of Slow Foam Free, and I've been working on this for 6 years. So I first want to thank those of you that represent the cities that have passed an ordinance. That means you support this effort. So I'm happy that we're addressing this again after we worked on it a year ago. We have hundreds of people from north to south that support us and couldn't be here today. A lot of them emailed and said they're at different appointments. So those of us that are here, and I want to thank that came out to support this today. Our generation does need to take care of this before we pass it on to the next generation that we're swamped in plastic. So the kinds of issues that we're dealing with today is specifically EPS foodware and packaging. It's an environmental pollutant. The County of San Luis Obispo has a duty to protect the natural environment, the economy, and the health of its citizens. Polystyrene is not in this equation. I've given you a handout. California now has 122 cities that have passed most of ordinances some complete and some not complete. Right now, Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, and El Segundo are working on this ordinance. And I might say that they're working on a full ordinance to ban both retail sale and restaurants. All stores here in San Luis Obispo in our five cities have complied with the retail, restaurants, and mail centers, the biggest users of polystyrene. Other supporters today are going to cover different all the other issues, but I'm going to highlight the packaging that comes from meat trays and egg cartons. I applaud that you have put in that you're going to remove the exemption for this for the county. Corporate grocery chains do not share in the landfill burden that their packaging creates. Costco, Vons, and Ralph's all package meat here in San Luis. Costco says they use thousands of trays per week. The guy says, I have no idea, lady, I'm busy. This ordinance will save a lot of foam daily from our landfills that come from foam meat trays. Egg cartons aren't that excessive, but they should be stopped. Grocery store chains have successfully found alternate recyclable trays. Grocers like Whole Foods don't use any trays. They package your meat right in directly in plastic. Trader Joe's phased out all foam in June. San Francisco passed this successfully 2 years ago, January 1. It became effective. No foam from outside is allowed in any grocery stores. So I've gone over the draft very carefully, and I have three things that I'd like to address today to make the ordinance clearer and lessen the misinterpretation. It's very important that our ordinance, which takes so much time to create, that we make it clear and readable.
Ms. Rance, if you can get to those three suggestions, because we are over
okay.
your 3 minutes.
Okay, we're talking you quick. Have them, but I'll go through them real quick. That our ordinance, where the container or beverage container is used, that food service ware is replaced. This ordinance does not cover just containers.
So are you just covering the ones that you have us for our handout?
Add in the prepared and raw foods where applicable.
Mr. Rands, since we have it in writing, you don't need to cover it by voice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. After Dr. Morris, we have Tim Jouet, Amy Wyatt, and Judith Bernstein.
Yes, thank you. I'm Dr. Joe Morris. I'm a retired professor and local resident of San Luis Obispo since 8 years ago. So I come here today to urge you to make it clear that nonprofit groups are included in this ban that we're working on today. My activities here, like most of you here, regularly involve visiting some nonprofit, for me, such as churches, senior services, environmental organizations. In this county, there's a surprising number of them and variety, maybe because of just the close community we have in this place. And recently, I just counted online and found there are at least 450 nonprofit groups in the county. Medical groups, fraternities, professional organizations, youth groups, charitable organizations, employees groups, civic organizations, recreational facilities, etc. Not only are there a great number and variety, but it's also quite often they use styrofoam in much greater quantity than businesses. Now, for example, consider a convenience store with 10 employees. Open, let's say, 50 hours a week. Now, across the street lies a church, medium size, with about 200 members, open 5 hours a week. Now, which one has more meetings, more cups of coffee sold or drunk? The church may use 10 times as much as that convenience store. So for this ordinance to be really effective, it must affect the nonprofits for their usage of styrofoam because it's quite substantial. So in conclusion, please then include clear and specific language that inclusion of the term nonprofit is mandated. Thank you.
Thank you. Tim Jouet.
Can I get my turn in line to Ms. Burrow?
Sure.
Thank you. I have to leave. I have another event I need to go to. My name is Ellen Bayrou, former mayor of Atascadero. I've also served on City Council Planning Commission, and I was an IWMA member back when I was on City Council, so I'm very familiar with the work you guys do, and I wanted to commend Chair Aaron Gomez and all of you for getting this to the point that we're at today. When I was mayor, I had a resolution encouraging that the restaurants stop using styrofoam containers and that the city no longer use plastic water bottles, and that was 10 years ago. So we've come a long way since then. I think it's people are understanding that we need change, and so I think this is a very good moment in our county's in our county to put this forth. I did review the ordinance today. I think it's very well worded. I did also review the list from Janine Rands, who we're very lucky to have a public advocate of her caliber to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. So I'm in agreement with some of those word changes to make it a little bit tighter and also to eliminate any, you know, big loopholes that might circumvent our effort to reduce the waste stream. So I want to thank you very much today for voting yes on this ordinance, incorporating these small changes, and that we can move forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Now Mr. Jouet, and then Amy White.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Jouet, resident of San Luis Obispo. I just wanted to come down personally and thank you for showing us what representative democracy is about today, especially considering the date. This is the point of it. I appreciate all the board of directors who are here discussing this. So anyways, I'm totally in support of the measure. I did read it. I don't have any suggestions beyond what people who are more expert in the field are, aside from to say, you know, this is a reasonable step to take, and it would have been a reasonable step for us to take 30 or 40 years ago as a society. So the only other comment I have is going backwards earlier when you were discussing SB 1383, if you need someone to dig through the trash cans, give me a call. I might be available.
Perfect. Ms. Wyatt.
Hi, my name's Amy Wyatt, and I'm honored to be here. I don't think I've been to the Waste Management Board before, and I wanted to come to support many of my heroes who are working towards climate change action and waste reduction. Maybe we'll be so successful in the future we won't need this board anymore, but that'll be in the long range. I also wanted to thank all of our community members, like Janine, who's so hardworking and has helped the community to move forward on the plastic bag bans and straw bans. Even if consumers didn't necessarily ask for it, small changes make a big difference. And I didn't plan to come today. I was at lunch with my family earlier, so Dan's not the only one who brought props, but it so happened today that I was at lunch, and I have my nice water bottle from some of my favorite transit agencies here, and I also have a soup thermos that you may be able to get at SOU Food Co-op fairly soon to reduce paper and wax-coated things. And I even have a heavier plastic bag. I know it's still plastic, but Supervisor Gibson, maybe something you want to consider to carry your burritos in the future.
I'm just going to put it in my pocket next time.
Yeah, I have a few throwaway bags in here, too. What I came up to speak upon, though, without my props, is that our community has over 80 miles of coastline, several lakes and reservoirs. And I'm an active paddler. I paddle my kayak and my stand-up paddleboard in our wonderful waterways frequently. And so I would like to speak in favor of encouraging the encapsulation of our buoys that are polystyrene to help protect wildlife. When I'm out paddling and we see the buoys, I know it's kind of a small thing, but I enjoy paddling with whales, dolphins, seals and all kinds of other marine life, including some big fish I've seen out there. And the buoys, when they start to degrade with the algae on them and salt water and so forth, you know, clearly they're going straight into the ocean and also being eaten by our marine life and then more. So I hope that's, I'm in support of that part of this piece, and so I hope that'll continue to stay in there. Thank you very much for all your hard work.
Thank you. After Judith Bernstein, we have, it looks like, an Alan or an Aline Villa, and a Daniel, either Carella or Canella.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being such attentive listeners. At least you look like you're listening attentively, and I'm really making it more easy to speak in front of a public group. I have talked to you before, and I'll address the same issue, which is affordability, which we all know is of concern to restaurant owners and grocery stores, and certainly for the consumer as well. The business owners that Janine cited, I have also interviewed Joanne Curry, who owns Splash Cafe, who made the change years ago, and Brian Appiano of Ribline, who made the change knowing it would cost him more, but it was the right thing, and Christy Rivera of Honeymoon Cafe in Pismo Beach. They all say that, number one, their patrons actually appreciate that, so it's, in a sense, it's a plus. And their customers care about the environment, so they're glad to see non-styrofoam use. The business and retail sales in our five cities that passed the ordinance have not suffered by choosing green alternatives. The costs are pennies different, but when we consider the cost of cheaper products compared to the cost of trash that goes to the landfill, the litter that Caltrans picks up, or the cause of death to birds and sea life, those costs are not a hardship. And I want to add one thing that I think I mentioned before. The studies that cite costs are often very misleading because they cite the cost per item, but no store or restaurant buys one fork or one spoon. Obviously, they buy things in bulk. The more they buy, the more the costs go down. The more businesses and restaurants that participate, the more suppliers can bring their costs down. So I don't put much stock in studies that only cite cost per item. The other thing I wanted to say is that I do hope the grocery chains can comply and support the ordinance. I know Janine has spoken to a few, like Smart and Final and Vons and Costco, and they seem supportive. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but apparently, and I wasn't either, that the San Francisco grocery industry has complied. Their ordinance was in effect January 2017, and that's a huge area that is managing. And last, I just want to say, as we know, whatever happens in Paso or Atascadero does not stay in Paso or Atascadero. It affects us all wherever we live. So making this countywide will be a very wise and much needed step for the board to take. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Villa.
Hi, board. My name is Aline Villa, and I'm also a director on the Oceano Community Service District, but I'm speaking today just as a resident from Oceano, not in any official capacity. I want to state that I do bi-monthly cleanups there in Oceano with the Oceano Community Association, and I've seen time and time again styrofoam there pick up cups, and unfortunately sometimes they are, as a former colleague here, Cynthia, has stated, in like 100 pieces, so I pick up the larger ones, the bulk of it, and just like leave the other 100 pieces there because it's just too much. And I think about, you know, the seagulls and all the birds and being so close there to the beach that they probably are going to confuse it with food and take off with it. And eventually these birds do die, and it makes our way, you know, into the food chain there, and we eventually consume it. And studies have shown that it does cause severe effects on our organs, you know, our lungs, our kidneys, liver, central nervous capacity there. So basically your whole body is affected. Who knows what it does? So we need to do, you know, as much as possible, and I urge you to vote yes and ban all this. It'll be difficult at first, like everything, but eventually everyone's going to go on board. We all want to save our environment, keep the Central Coast beautiful, save our wildlife, and save the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Daniel Canella. I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. First, I'd just like to say I'm in favor of you all supporting this ordinance banning polystyrene and expanded polystyrene. A few more specific details about it. I support a former speaker's point that nonprofits should be added to the ordinance. I believe that's an excellent idea, something I hadn't even thought about before today, but he made a great point with that. Second, I noticed in the ordinance there's no exception for farmers markets or farmers markets vendors, and I would just encourage you to keep in mind, I support that there's not an exception for them, but it seems like it's going to be a very big lift for them to move away from polystyrene, especially in terms of utensils and other containers. But I just encourage you, the board, to further consider how they might work with the farmers market and those vendors to find some sort of sustainable solution. Next point is, in the letter that you received from the California Poultry Federation, Mr. Bill Matos asked for an exemption for meat that was packaged outside the county, which is the same as the city, which exempted meat that was packaged outside the city. If you do this, I would encourage you to have a sunset clause for that within 1, 2, or 3 years, because as he mentioned in his letter to you all, they are moving towards more sustainable, non-single-use, non-polystyrene packaging, and he said that they'd be able to do that within 2 years. So I would like to encourage them strongly to do that as fast as possible. Finally, this isn't directly pertinent to this item, but it's related. Currently, the IWMA website and the IWMA says that compostable utensils and containers should not be put in the green waste or food waste bin. So we don't have the facilities to deal with those right now. I don't know if the Hitachi Zosen, the new CompoGas facility, will be able to deal with that. But if not, I believe I would encourage the IWMA to either ban or otherwise discourage businesses from using these compostable items at their stores. And one example is Yogurtland. They have compostable spoons, and those are just not being composted. They're going in the trash, and it creates a sense of greenwashing, that these businesses are being more sustainable when really no benefit is being gained since we can't compost these items. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. So I have no more public speaker cards. Mr. Hendrick, I know you are there, shaking yours.
Thank you very much, sir.
I would like to put on the radar plastic microbeads. They're invasive of our world, the water supplies, the rivers, the lakes. The public water supplies have plastic microbead content. They are found in things like toothpaste and cosmetics and cleaners, and they get flushed down the sewer system. They are not processed by the sewer system. They are passed on through. They get down to the ocean. The fish in the ocean have plastic microbead content. And human bodies have a load of plastic microbeads into our flesh. I would like to put that on the radar along with the polystyrene problem. But it's even more serious because these microbeads are almost invisible. They need to be stopped at the source.
Thank you, Ms. Hedrick. So I have one that says for Catherine Ellen. I'm assuming that is you're speaking on her behalf.
Catherine Ellen from Arroyo Grande. She couldn't make it. I asked her to cover this topic, and it's on number 6 on your paper, Certificate of Compliance. All the new ordinances are asking that a certificate renewal by each business sign and agree that they've read that there is a polystyrene ordinance, and it spells out in their ordinance. They don't have to, but each year that they renew. We found that to be important for San Luis Obispo. We had a restaurant that was using styrofoam 3 years ago in takeout containers, and we called them on it. If they had signed it every year, we wouldn't have to deal with that. Thank you.
Thank you. So that ends public comment. Bring it back to the board for questions, comments, and then deliberation all in one fell swoop. Who wants to start it off? Mr. Lee, looks like you're ready.
I'll be happy to start. Just had a couple logistical questions. I'm seeing on page 184 of our staff section, which is the violation section. Am I reading that correctly, that this ordinance is intended to put the enforcement of this on the individual jurisdictions, which obviously as an agency or an organization that currently has an ordinance in place, we've got the procedure for that. But I know Atascadero, Paso Robles, and the county probably don't have that. So is that the intent, though, is to have the jurisdictions become the policing authorities for that?
I'd like to add that was my single most important question to ask here today.
I'll answer that. Sorry about that. We're mirroring past ordinances with the plastic bag, with the batteries, with the fluorescents, with the paints, with the unwanted medication, with the sharps. Each jurisdiction city is responsible for the enforcement on it because the IWMA is not an enforcement entity. We're an education entity. Now, that being said, we have never had to go down that path. First and foremost, doing the outreach, that's the most important part. And most businesses really respond well to it. If you have an ordinance, you walk in the front door. I'm typically the one who does walk in the front door. I work through all the issues they have. We work with businesses to make it fit their model because everybody's a little bit different. We do the outreach and education. We supply, maybe it's interior containers to help them through this process, whatever it is to make it manageable for them. We supply the graphics. Again, we do the training for employees. We supply the material for their new employee manuals. We've never had to go beyond. But if we did, it would be the responsibility of the individual cities to enforce, or the county would be environmental health.
Because that was my primary concern, and based on the last time our council had a discussion on this issue, it was that we preferred that this issue be handled at the county level because our city, with its thin staff, does not have any desire whatsoever to be in the enforcement business for this. But we're open to having a countywide ordinance or an IWMA ordinance regarding it. So I'm concerned because my understanding had been that under the plastic bag ordinance that you were the point of referral, as you described, but that the IWMA was also the point of enforcement. So what I'm hearing you say, though, is that you're that education piece. You go out and you describe in your initial contact saying, hey, you're not supposed to be providing these items, but that then you're expecting the cities to do the enforcement, which, of course, we in Paso do not have an ordinance in and of ourselves, whereas the cities still have, at least on the books, their existing ordinances, whether they perfectly match this ordinance or not. Only SLO would perfectly match it, and that's if we made no changes to it. So I'm wondering what that – are you actually expecting that the city then would go, okay, that somebody in the city, and I have no idea who that would be in our city, would be going to a restaurant and going, hey, I'm here to enforce an IWMA ordinance?
That is correct. However, that being said, it would be a failure on my part that it would ever get to that point. the bottom line is that we really work one-on-one with businesses.
Okay. And is that because, and maybe this is a question for Mr. Minery, in terms of the powers of the JPA and the powers of the IWMA, does the IWMA not have that authority within the confines of the JPA?
Well, the IWMA, as an agency, is granted all the powers that are like powers amongst all the member agencies. So is there some enforcement, inherent enforcement ability in there? I would say yes. However, enforcement is tricky. The IWMA currently has, I believe, three staff, full-time staff. That's difficult. And so to expect Brooks or Patty to go and start enforcing this and issuing fines, I have a hard time seeing that happen. And even though this does grant the authority to member agencies to assist in enforcement, how is that with your authorized districts, your local community services districts, who also don't have an enforcement provision? So really, I think that enforcement is inherently difficult. The county and the cities, of course, have more of the ability to enforce, probably through whoever's inspecting the local establishments that would be most affected by this. But really what this is an ordinance that doesn't rely on enforcement per se, but relies on education and voluntary compliance, which from my understanding, talking with Brooks and the plastic bag ordinance and other various ordinances, voluntary compliance is generally what has occurred.
Right. And I understand it's been like the plastic bag ban has been very effective, and maybe it's been so effective that I assumed Patty, besides education, did necessary enforcement. It's just interesting to me regarding whether each city has their own, ordinances for fine schedules and things for imposing administrative fines, et cetera. I've never heard of a city imposing a fine, on behalf of a county level entity, I guess.
If I might, Mr. Sure. Chairman.
Thank you.
From the plastic bag, single-use plastic bag ordinance, and it's a provision I think should be written into this ordinance as well. The IWMA may enforce the provisions of this ordinance through civil action for civil penalties, and goes on the amount established wherein, other civil remedies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it speaks to what the IWMA can recover. And in addition to civil relief available to the IWMA, any violation of this ordinance shall also constitute a misdemeanor punishable by the laws in the state of California, which gets the DA and the courts involved in this. And so in terms of prosecuting this, I think that the same structure, and these are the structures with all our ordinances. I've been here since we started this. It also allows the individual jurisdictions to go after them if they so choose.
Right.
And so I think that that's the proper structure of this. That said, we never have had to get to that because the IWMA does an outstanding job in education and voluntary compliance, and I think that's the direction we'd like to go. But I think in order for this to have teeth, we have to make sure that this is properly assigned our authority to exercise it.
Right. And I agree that it needs to have some teeth by somebody. And were you reading Supervisor Gibson from the plastic bag ordinance or
yes.
Section E on page 185, four, which sounds similar but not identical to what you just read?
From section 4, the enforcement of the plastic bag ordinance.
And I see on page 185 in section E, it has similar, although not identical, language to what you said, which would be fine with me. I was just concerned that where Mayor Lee referred to on page 184, where it says, if upon revisit by IWMA to the establishment, IWMA may notify the applicable member jurisdiction for enforcement. And our, premise in Atascadero is we're supportive of the general concept of an ordinance, but not that it would be enforced at the city level.
Mr. Hill, and then we'll head down here.
I would encourage our colleagues not to focus on what has often proven to be a red herring about the enforcement issues, which we did hear at times during the plastic ban too. This is meant to, you know, I mean, first and foremost, it's meant to educate consumers, citizens, in the change of behavior for the protection of the environment and the greater good. In fact, I think by sort of referring it back to the cities, it probably would find a greater support, hopefully, among city councils, because that leaves the discretion completely. You know, we have not had to use the force of law right. to get people to comply to changes in consumer behavior, and that's really what we want to focus on most, first and foremost. We didn't have to do it with the plastic bag ban, hadn't had to be done with smoking bans, and these things have proven to be highly successful and for everybody's good.
Mr. Stewart?
And just to reiterate what I said at our last meeting was when we applied this ordinance in Arroyo Grande 3.5 years ago, we had 3 complaints within the first 6 months, and it was a matter of education. It was through our police department. They went out, provided each of the vendors with the wording, and they complied immediately. So it just goes back to it's that education, and it really wasn't much burden on the city, and I don't imagine... the ordinance that's presented here is a little bit different than what we have and will require some more oversight. But again, I think it's that education that's really going to make the difference.
And if I could, I think my follow-up to my obvious softball first question was, yes, that's how it's written. But I think Supervisor Gibson kind of has an approach that I think I'd be supportive of adding into this ordinance is put that language from the plastic bag ordinance as the kind of the higher level priority in this violation section, and then default to the city's jurisdictions if they have one for violations in the anticipation that the IWMA is going to do the outreach. We're going to have very minimal non-compliance, so we're going to have much supportive compliance, and hopefully we never need to use this section in the future, but it is there if necessary.
Yeah, I think it's just an addition to articulate the powers that the IWMA inherently holds. And let me, if I could ask Council, in terms of we're looking at first reading here, are we agendized properly to make the necessary changes and bring it back for final action at the next point?
No, I would suggest that based on our changes are going to be substantive enough that we would bring it back for a first reading again.
Okay.
His suggestion doesn't seem like a real substantive.
I mean, it's very important, but it doesn't seem like it's...
Well, let's see where we go.
But yeah, okay. I don't want to delay this because of that.
And my question is, but there's also going to be any changes based on comments from members of the public, changes of nonprofits was suggested. So I would like to hear a little bit more about where your board's going to go. If the only change is Supervisor Gibson's, I think that's already encapsulated in this... Generally, I think
it's an expression of something that already exists.
That's already in here. I'm okay with that, but it depends on if you go much further.
Right. Yeah.
And perhaps maybe...
Mr. Hammond.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. Yeah. You know, just in history-wise, you know, our council didn't produce a city ordinance when everyone else did. In years past, mainly because, again, public demand. And the public demand that we did see was not from our own city. It was mostly other folks demanding that past Robles kind of fall in line. And, you know, I agree that, you know, education is really the best way to get out of this polystyrene issue. But I don't really believe in feel-good ordinances. In other words, this ordinance, to me, would not really do the job. In other words, in my trade, we have a lot of polystyrene that is packaging. In other words, all kinds of trade construction-type products that aren't even addressed in this kind of an ordinance. And again, it's people who feel like they don't want to use polystyrene shouldn't buy those products at those stores. And in other words, that would be the signal to the proprietaries that maybe we ought to be looking at something different. And to me, again, that's the change that should happen. Just like Barreau said, people over time will demand it and things will change, you know, naturally. So for my sake, again, I don't think I'm going to be voting for this approval to I'm not sure about Tascadero, but again, it's certainly every city's right to be able to put their own demands on their public. But I think we're using IWMA, in other words, to get the North County to comply, and that's not what we're going to do. Thank you.
Ooh. Mr. Lee.
I was going to go in towards the nonprofit question of direction, and perhaps my initial thought was the a nonprofit could be considered a vendor or could be considered a user of materials that are being bought or purchased from local local vendors that have now been included in the prohibition of materials. So I don't know if we need to specifically discuss adding nonprofits to here, because I think it's a de facto result of the ordinance.
Ask council if he feels nonprofits are properly covered.
That's a better question. Yes.
I think that it's probably the intent was to probably sweep in all suppliers, and I do see that it in the definition of food and beverage provider, it does say that it's a retailer. I believe it's probably we could remove just the limitation to retailers, and that would be inclusive of nonprofits as well.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask. Sorry, that the item 7 on the handout include nonprofit, but you think it's already in there? It's already assumed.
If we remove that word, it could be encompassed.
Well, it lists so many specific things there. Why not just include the words, you know, it lists everything from farmers markets to vending machines. Why not just include nonprofits? Because they do host a lot of events.
I think the question kind of comes down, does it become substantive to where we have to bring it back for another?
It's just a clarification.
Yeah.
I think it's a clarification at okay. this point.
We'll be a provider of prepared foods instead of a retailer, a provider.
As long as it's inclusive, yes.
Okay. We'll make sure that's clarified.
Okay. Mr. Heller?
Thank you. I'm inclined to want to approve the ordinance as currently written. I appreciate the comments from the public. I'd like to have those reviewed by the staff and perhaps revise the ordinance the next time back, but I'd like to see some action taken on this today. I don't know the best way to incorporate the comments from the public, but it's possibly very valuable, and maybe we should incorporate some of those changes.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to hash that out right now, basically, because if whatever we do want included, that again, that comes to the substantive, and that becomes the next reading isn't our second reading, it's our first reading. So then we'd have to go through this whole process again. So that's kind of the unfortunate position that we get put in when we get elected for these things.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, and again, going back to council, and that you, Mr. Hill, you want?
No, okay.
And I'm happy to yield the floor to you, sir. It'd be fine. I'm not quite sure of the intent. There's a number of specific changes that have been proposed, and I don't know if you have that sheet in front of you at this point. None of them are exactly labeled into what they're supposed to accomplish, but I guess going back to your drafting of the ordinance, Mr. Minery, is there any, and we can give you a few minutes to look those over, I don't see that there were any particular holes. In fact, I thought that the wording of it was broad enough to catch everything that we were concerned about. I think the clarification to be clear that a nonprofit is covered is a good one. The clarification of the enforcement abilities of the IWMA is a good one. But these are specific word changes that I think, in getting more specific, may open up holes, whereas your more general language has probably covered the net properly. And we could, we could craft a motion to direct staff to make the two changes that we've talked about, plus review any other comments by the public and bring back an ordinance for final action in October.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the same sense of wordsmithing at this point. If we're not accomplishing anything new, I think goes beyond what we should be doing. So, were you first or were Mr. Hill? Mr. Hill, and then back.
I'm going to address my friend and colleague over here, Mr. Hammond. I can tell you that people have been talking to me about this for a long time. Certainly never, ever brought up anything to do with North County or there a difference. And I would encourage you, since I think we have a much more regionally focused approach to many issues now, and all I ever hear about PASO from others, including staff and colleagues on city councils, is essentially admiration for how good PASO has been doing, not just as a city alone, but as an important partner in our larger community. So we have time, both today and the next time this comes back. This is one of those things that I think, you know, just like with the plastic ban, there's always going to be a certain number of people who, you know, who are agitating for it because it's something that they really care about deeply and they see the impacts. And there were a lot of people then, as you recall, that were very much opposed, and we passed it very closely, and it's worked, and we haven't had to put people in jail. We haven't had to put businesses out of business. In fact, people made the adjustment pretty easily and found even ways to, you know, use the use of reusable bags in a marketing sense and all those good things. So I would just say, I hear where you're coming from. I respect that there is a, you know, a little difference, though I would also say that where we're at now, and you and I as being, you know, longtime colleagues here on several boards should try to look towards the more cooperative regional. I think PASO is too important to want to do things without PASO. Mm-hmm. Same with the Atascadero as well. So I don't sense that there's ever been, I just want to assure you that there's ever been any sense from anybody, including people here who've met with me, that this is about trying to get, you know, PASO or the North County to go along with something. It's never been, and I wouldn't think of that too. I think it would, it's not the best approach.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. I again, it just kind of relaying what happened in those. There was a couple of meetings there where, you know, hard pressure from South County kind of came up and overwhelmed a lot of the locals. And again, truly, I come back to the fact you can't regulate stupid. There's a lot of people that, you know, shouldn't do the, you know, these things, and they do. But we're kind of having to regulate because of a few. But I've seen, and since the bag ban has happened too, people are doing the right thing on their own, and they did need to be regulated.
We did have to pass the ban, though.
Yep, no, not really. I mean, in our family, we didn't need that at all to tell us the right thing to do. But there's other people, of course, that we do, and that's the problem with any kind of government. I understand the point that, you know, sometimes we do have to regulate down to that level just because of a few that don't want to do the right thing. And that's really kind of what I'm seeing here too, that eventually the industries will see the wrong in polystyrene and we will get away from it. I just mentioned again that our own industry is getting away from it. It's happening, but again, I just don't think that to demand that everybody comply, and we're all individuals. In other words, cities are their own individuals, and if they choose to do the way they want to do it, I think that's my opinion and that's what I'm carrying the voice from. And that's why I think, you know, we'll pass on this one, but we'll see.
Well, I would hope that you would see at least that there's certainly no intent. I don't think anybody would say that there's an intent to do this separately and somehow
push.
Focus regionally.
I get it.
You know,
yeah.
To the North County, because that's not it. Yeah. And I do think the truth is, and I would speak to myself, without these. And I know that, you know, you can make a good argument that some of this stuff is can you know, we can regulate too much, and that can create all sorts of other problems. But in terms of getting people to change their behavior, that's why I wanted to talk about not being distracted by the enforcement part of it, because that's not what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, smoking is the best example. It you know, in terms of banning it, in terms of banning it inside, in terms of banning it outside, in terms of banning it from certain distances. You had to ban it, even though, you know, and people aren't, your police, my police, nobody's going to onto the beach, for instance, and giving people tickets, but there's a lot less people smoking, and there's a lot less people littering because of the education and then the weird good peer pressure that occurs from it. So I would just say that I get it. This is mostly meant to change behaviors. I would say that, and I would look at myself as one of them. Yeah. These things help me do, you know, do the right thing right, that I might not be otherwise encouraged to, out of, not stupidity, but I think we're busy and we get lazy about things. And so these are ways of keeping us moving in the right direction on pollution. But I just wanted to disabuse you of any sense that there's a desire to push something politically towards Paso, Atascadero, Knox County.
So I'll carry that back. Maybe you guys can take this offline.
I think it's a very valid. I mean, I respect Mr. Hammond's perception on this, but I also think that this this particular ordinance, like our other ordinances, is not onerous in the end. This is we're moving in a direction that we need to move in. Our statement via ordinance here, which never gets into formal court-ordered enforcement, is a good one. I'm prepared to offer a motion, Mr. Chairman, if it's the pleasure of the board here.
Yeah, I have like several more questions, technical questions about this, and I don't want to drag in the weeds because I hope they can just be answered. And
okay, I want to make a few comments since I haven't got to talk yet. just to kind of lay the groundwork, the understanding of why we got to this point, in the sense of all of our jurisdictions' waste rates went up. We had to approve those. Those waste rates run up because of items like this. As much as, you know, we want to put the onus on consumer responsibility, that is literally asking people that don't understand a system to change their habits to conform to that system. And yet we're still subsidizing that system by our rates as well as all of the cleanup that we end up doing. And it is this board's, I mean, it is our responsibility to educate the public on the understanding of that. And even, as we all know, we sat on this board and we don't quite understand our recycling system. So I think it's tough to expect the public who doesn't understand to come to us and demand a shift when we haven't provided them the full understanding. And now that we're getting the full understanding, I think it's our responsibility, if not to support a ban, at least educate the public on here's the reality of how our system's working, and we have a position that we can make it for the entire county so it's more equal, as opposed to going city by city where that trash travels beyond those borders. You know, you guys have a recycling center up there, we have a recycling center South County, all of that trash intermingles. So I mean, I think the understanding, the bigger responsibility of how our system works and what our ability is to change that system and not pass on basically the conflict or the financial burden onto the public as opposed to those that are creating the products in the first place. So those are my comments.
Yes, I have some questions. To be clear, in reading this, because you know, certain things in the definitions, and then we kind of generically say no more styrofoam. So this is applying to meat trays. This applies to egg cartons. Not sure how the packing peanuts come in into play here. They're in a definition, but so my question is relative to, and perhaps this come at the time of a motion, relative to the letter from the Poultry Federation. I spoke to them, and they understood where this would go, but they just asked for time, you know. And currently, this ordinance, as written, is basically a 6-month implementation date, and so I'm wondering, well, like I said, maybe that's an amendment to somebody's motion, but to allow for, let's say, a 1-year implementation for that particular aspect for egg cartons and meat trays versus the more immediate implementation for everything else. Because it's not just a big company like Foster Farms that packages, as they say, a million, you know, trays of this stuff a day and have some machines that already can do non-styrofoam stuff. There are other small packers, and I don't think you want to do something that's essentially is going to make it harder for the smaller business and easier for the big giant guy. So I would suggest that we do that. But I did have two questions regarding the things that Ms. Rands provided. She mentions quite a big loophole regarding the wording. It's that if you order something online, obviously we order things online. My wife ordered a thing, and not only did it come a piece of furniture, not only compact in styrofoam, the styrofoam is wrapped in plastic, which seems like, you know, ridiculously doubly wasteful versus this cup I've had for 6 months and continue to reuse. we can't address the Amazon problem here. Yeah. But I did want to make sure that I believe the member of the Chamber of Commerce motion, if somebody makes a product here in San Luis Obispo County, and they pack it in styrofoam, whether it's, you know, this kind of packing or peanuts or whatever, that they not be at disadvantage of selling that product in our very own county versus, you know, I can order it online and get it shipped here and it's stuffed full of styrofoam versus somebody making it in the county. So that's a kind of a reverse loophole to what I think she's referring to, but I think she does make a valid point in that sense that you want to make sure that people can't just order a bunch of styrofoam stuff online and then use it in this. They cannot. I guess it's clear enough in the ordinance they can't use it correct. In these facilities.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys think that's all clear, I think she made a potentially valid point there. We didn't address it, but I don't agree with having a certificate of compliance because our business have enough things to do annually with the government. They don't need one more thing to do there.
Did you want him to address the...
Director Barbeau, I will say that in regards to your comment about packaging peanuts or styrofoam peanuts, they could not be redistributed within the county. So someone could receive them, but they can't use them to repackage other material and sell it in the county.
Okay. And then to also be clear, we talk about number six, you know, polystyrene and a resin coat of number six. I want to make sure we're talking styrofoam. We're not talking like plastic utensils that have, you know, number six on them or something. We're going to address single-use plastic items in some point in the future, correct?
No, just to be clear, it is all items that are made of polystyrene, whether it's the expanded foam or the clear or the colored, all resin coats, number six.
So let's say, you know, Mr. Gibson got a plastic fork. I'll call it a plastic fork right. with his burrito, but that could have had a number six stamped on it and been...
And that's my job, to go in and talk to all the restaurants who are handing out all those items.
Okay.
Because those can also be made out of number two or number one.
Well, exactly. Correct. Okay. Because that can kind of confuse me. I thought those were not polystyrene. You were saying some models of those are polystyrene. And I'm assuming they can be easily replaced by others or by
yes.
potentially more environmentally friendly things.
Same with clamshells. You know,
that is correct.
Right. All right. Okay, thank you. And then as long as we address the issue, as Mr. Gibson suggested, on the language on enforcement. And I do understand, Supervisor Hill, that these are... How, you know, kind of what-if scenarios, they're way down the road from the education and the enforcement. But again, our premise was to have this enforced from the county level. Like to see it happen today, but just want to make sure we aren't in a position where the city's expected to enforce an IWMA ordinance. So thank you all.
Ms. Blake?
Just one more thing. And I carry this little wooden spoon around. It's so cute. You know, it just replaced plastic. Anyway, page 183, the exemptions clauses here under B that allows the director of the IWMA to issue exemptions. And I just wanted to know if everybody else is in agreement with that or if they have a problem with it.
It's just part of the culture of the IWMA. That's part of the cooperative approach
yeah.
that we've used. So I think
okay.
it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Could I ask a procedural question? Are we trying to keep this on the first reading now? Is that the goal?
My read on your board is yes.
Okay.
Several members, yes.
So we're trying not to wordsmith as much as possible, right?
Well, I think if it's clarifications and things, we could...
Just a couple things.
Sure.
One, Sheila's comment. Sheila, that occurs also in another area earlier, but it's on page 183, section 7A. If you read the last sentence, the executive director shall put the decision to grant or deny a one-year exemption in writing, and the decision shall be final. And I'm thinking, no, that's probably not true, because there's always somewhere you can appeal. Mm-hmm. You can appeal, one, to this board, and you could also, no doubt, appeal to the courts. So mm-hmm. writing things in there like that kind of bother me. One, and I want to thank John Hammonds for his comments. I, too, am in the construction business. And if you build a house today, you'll get enough styrofoam packaging in the products that you put in that house that would frighten anyone that's concerned about this ordinance. Refrigerators, all the inside the cardboard box, all the corners are packed with styrofoam, patio furniture,
The faucets that are on your sink, the sinks are packaged in styrofoam. It's frightening how much styrofoam occurs in the packaging for construction products, and I just want to recognize John has tried to point that out, and I certainly am front and center in seeing it in our business. The sunset clause with the poultry, I read that letter, and they did say they were trying to change to something different. Appreciate that. They're looking to the future. The only other...
And this will help them.
I wanted to clarify, are we, with Mr. Gibson's comments here about the enforcement, are we taking out the F sections or that have to do with fines and the police department coming to your business? And
no, it's simply to add the IWMA enforcement authority explicitly in an effort to avoid those kinds of things.
And if I might, just so that I make sure I understand Supervisor Gibson's comment as well, I believe the idea is to essentially E is very close to what Mr. Gibson was.
I understand that part, but the one before it, D, says we're going to fine you.
Yeah.
In the fine. Are we fining them?
I believe that the IWMA would retain the rights to fine and seek all civil recourse and would be able to refer the matter to member agency jurisdictions to enforce as they deem.
And those things are in our other ordinances. We have to establish, yes, that we have the ability. We've never come close to using them, but they are in those.
Supervisor,
we're actually kind of reordering the priority list that's in here and clarifying it to mirror the plastic bag ordinance.
And I think I made a comment at the executive board that I felt that giving people a reward for doing it right was a lot better than a fine for doing it wrong. I thought you'd get better results. And I just, in the long term, would like to suggest to the staff that maybe we create some kind of a little sticker that says I've conformed to this ordinance or a plaque that they can put up in their business. So those are my comments. I don't think I'll go as far as Mr. Hammonds and vote against this, but certainly I've seen enough styrofoam in our business to make this look almost helpless.
To help,
thank you, Sheila.
To help move it in the right direction. I think that one of the hallmarks of the IWMA has been a voluntary compliance effort that's extraordinary. Thus, we don't see members of the public here opposing our regulation before. In there, and to Mr. Barbeau's concerns, we do have the hardship exemptions that will allow local businesses to move into a place where I think that they can be in compliance. If I might then try a motion here, I'd like to...
Sorry, Supervisor Gibson. If I could, I'd like to just revise staff recommendation, or if you'd like to do it in your own words, to introduce the ordinance by full title, a waiver of the first reading, and then direction to bring it back for a second reading and approval at the next meeting.
Okay. So I will introduce an ordinance regulating polystyrene and expanded polystyrene, parentheses, EPS, closed parens, food containers, and products, and waive the first reading of it, direct staff to modify the ordinance in two measures, one to clarify the IWMA's inherent enforcement authority, and second, to clarify language as to what sorts of entities are covered by this ordinance in an effort to address the question regarding nonprofits. I would also add to that to direct staff to review the entire ordinance for any technical or typographical changes and make those as necessary and return for a second reading at our October meeting.
And I would second that.
Point of clarification with the council, please.
Yeah.
So, with that motion, the next it can be adopted in the second reading, yes. And voted on then if it were to pass today.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. We have a motion and a second. We'll do a roll call.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Blake?
Yes.
Director Borbo?
Yes.
Director Heller?
Yes.
Director Enns?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
No.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director Storton?
Yes.
President Gomez?
Yes.
That passes.
And with that, it passes. And we have a dance party. So after that, we've got member comments and future agenda items. Anybody got any more comments they want for the future? Seeing none, I am adjourning this meeting.
That's good.